It's time for Twig this week in Google. Stacy, Jeff, and Ant are all here. Lots to talk about. We'll give you some book recommendations. Tell you what Elon Musk wants to do to Twitter. He's become a little clearer on that. Twitter's new notes feature. And Amazon says, if we keep hiring at this rate, we're going to run out of people. That's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 669, recorded Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022. Mommy Made Me Match My M&Ms. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by New Relic. The next 9 p.m. call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month, free, forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/twig. And by Policy Genius. If someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, aging parent, even a business partner, you need life insurance. Head to policygenius.com/twig to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. And by Blue Land. Stop wasting water and throwing out more plastic. Get Blue Land's revolutionary refill cleaning system instead. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/twig. It's time for Twig. This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse, the Twitterverse, the Metaverse, and the Metaverse. One is a trademarked Metaverse. The other one is the generic Metaverse. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Hello, Stacey.
Hello, everyone.
Stacey on IoT.com, still the best place to learn about IoT, the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel. Get the newsletter. It's free. Good to see you today. Looks like a nice, bright, sunny second day of summer in your area.
You know, yesterday was summer, but today it's skirted back into, you know, winter.
Oh, you know,
but it's coming.
Pacific Northwest, one day of summer is about all you can expect.
Yeah, we always have a joke. Is summer going to fall on the weekend this year?
You can only hope. It was 101 degrees here yesterday. 38 degrees for our friends above the 49th parallel. That's very hot. It's a little cooler now. I think it's only 90. That is, ladies and gentlemen, the professional baritone of Mr. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Good to see you. What was that?
That's one of the.
Do you have a new thing you can do?
From the new camera.
He's doing a little trick. All right, we'll talk about your new camera and your little camera tricks in a second, but first.
Obnoxious things I can do.
It's pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, it is.
First, let's say hi to Hands On Photography host. He's sitting in the dark. Ladies and gentlemen, Ant Pruitt. And then the lights come
there
on.
There it is.
There's
one. We forced him to do that. Twit.tv/HOP. Hey, can I say how much fun I had last week doing your book club, Stacey?
Oh, thank you. I had so much. I was so glad that you came, and I can't wait to. I guess we can't find out.
Can I come some more?
Yeah, you are always welcome at the book club.
Oh, good. Because I actually, nobody would ever let me be in their book club.
Why is that?
It's because you like Neal Stephenson.
Because I talk too much. And I'm afraid I did that again on Thursday. But
did you get picked for the basketball teams?
What?
In school?
No, I'm a nerd. Of course not. I was always last picked.
No on that one.
Yeah, I was always last picked. But I don't get how that's germane.
Anyway. Well, you don't get picked for the book club.
Oh, yeah. No, I lost on both ends.
You're just out of everything.
I didn't get the nerd pick either. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of rude.
I was chosen for both, so I can't.
Yeah, I bet you were. Are you tall?
Are you tall?
I was 5'9" when I was in seventh grade.
Yeah, that's tall.
So I was less impressive as
Do we know yet what book we're going to do, you're going to do next?
No, we've got to wait. We've got until Friday to vote.
Where is the vote taking place?
It is in our Discord under the book club channel.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I could probably pin it if I didn't pin it.
No, that's all right. It's so use the reaction buttons on this vote to post. So Waist Tide, Binti, or Clara in the Sun. Clara in the Sun is pulling away. But that's because you sold it. You sold it. By the same guy.
It's also short, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this other one was so long. That was like 8 book clubs worth of Stevenson. All right. Good. All right. So we will continue the vote till Friday and then announce the next Stacey's book club. They're always sci-fi, right?
It's a sci-fi book club. But we do try to pull in authors from like different parts of the world or different points of view. So it's
nice.
We really try to get a variety in there.
And it is for Club Twit members. I'm sorry. So you have to go to, if you're not a Club Twit member, twit.tv/clubtwit. You do get a lot of other benefits, but this is one of the benefits is the Stacey's book club. And then you go to the book club conversation in our Discord and you can vote there and do so quickly. That was really fun anyway. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for letting
You were great.
Letting me be in there.
You didn't talk too much, as I'm assuming that's what you're thinking, but I just like the fact that you sold me on giving the book another try.
You did. Oh, and you
I'm
know
a
what
pitch
else?
Man, that's
Leo,
why.
Last week, you did.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say last week you did. You convinced me to stick with Cloud Cuckoo Land, and I did, and you were right.
Ugh, yay!
Words. But yes,
see, I knew the sci-fi. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there's. It turns into sci-fi, which is what's so neat about it, because the future stuff is there.
I don't think I convinced you because I haven't read it.
Oh, okay. Then it was Jeff that convinced. I'm sorry.
Me.
Jeff, you
me.
Were right. Holy moly.
Ooh, get the history books out, folks, and add a line.
Woo! So I should add that to my book subscriptions as well. I think actually it's on my wish list, I think. Yeah, it is. Because of you. Yeah. So that's worth reading. All right, good.
Well, Stacey, I'm impressed. You stuck with it. Because I was a little dubious for a while, too. But then I got into it.
Yeah, after I got the 12% the way through, then I was like, boom, I'm in it.
Sometimes books are like that. You have to read enough. Oh, I have 2 new credits. It's the 22nd. Oh, I love
it. Oh, happy day.
My favorite time of the month when I get 2 new credits on Audible. Oh, yay. Good. Now I guess I'll add Cloud Cuckoo Land and, but I got to wait because I don't know yet what the book club book will be.
Oh. Mm. You can always buy extra credits, as I do constantly.
Yeah, you're a reader. I am actually reading, and I highly recommend it to anybody who's a geek, the biography of John von Neumann.
I recommended that to you.
Oh, yeah.
I figured it was because it was on the list. It's quite good. Thank you.
That is. It explains things very well, which
a lot of physics
is hard.
Yeah, a lot of physics in it. But it's also, I mean, he is in many respects the father of modern computing. We often call our computers von Neumann machines. The Man from the Future by Ananya Bhattacharya.
He's computing and. I always think of him as the hardware side of computing.
That's right.
And then Claude Shannon as computing is in information science and computer science.
But von Neumann also designed the atom bomb and more particularly the hydrogen bomb. He did a lot of stuff. He was very political. So it's very interesting and it's a good story. And I think Bhattacharya makes a good case for him being kind of like from Mars, like so brilliant that he's almost an alien. There was a whole, it was interesting because there was a whole group of Hungarians from the 20s who were like brilliant mathematicians. There was this whole renaissance coming out of Hungary. And he kind of addresses this a little bit. Why? Was it the schooling? What was it? The culture and cultural environment? Most of them were Jewish. And of course, a lot of them had to flee because of during World War II. It's a very interesting story. That's where Andy Grove came from, one of the founders of Intel and CEO.
Intel.
Yeah. Anyway.
Can I recommend a few more books since I've had two successes in a row here?
Yes. Always interested.
Quit
Trust by Hernan Diaz is a novel.
Wait,
about Trust by Hernan Diaz from the Gilded Age period, and a story told from four perspectives. And the audiobook has four narrators in it, so it's quite nice.
The Gilded Age is fascinating. I find the Gilded Age fascinating.
I do too. That's why. And it's part of the one of the books I'm working on, so that's why I've been researching.
The early part of the 20th century, particularly in the U.S., and, you know, the Rockefellers and the Morgans and the, you know, the Astors.
Better than the HBO show.
City I actually like the HBO show, but you're right. There's more to it. It's basically Edith Wharton. Just read Edith Wharton. Go ahead. Yeah. What was the other
City on Fire by Dan Winslow. Not my kind of novel normally, but it's really good. It's a crime novel.
I love Dan Winslow. Twitter. He's so great.
Yeah. This new one is good, City on Fire. It's amazing. And the audio version is really good at the accents and voices. And coming from Jersey, I can tell you, even though it's Massachusetts, it's kind of the same thing. Sentence by Daniel Genis, G-E-N-I-S. Guy who was a schmuck, and he got sentenced to 10 years in prison, and he read 1,000 books while he was there.
10 years, 1,000 books. I might skip
that. Wait, did you read The Sentence?
Wow.
By Louise Erdrich?
Erdrich is set in The Sentence.
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Newspaper Axis. The Newspaper Axis, a little more historical here, but it's the bad newspaper moguls in the day who were against FDR and they created the war.
I suddenly realized why I have so many books on my wish list. It's your fault. It's totally your fault.
I just Candy House I talked about last week.
Clearly.
Which book?
Candy House I talked about last week was very good.
I added that one, yeah.
And then I just started Meet Me by the Fountain, A History of the Mall.
Oh God!
I find fascinating.
I have that. That's it. That came in from the library for me. I'm really excited about that one. Yes, because I'm a child of the '80s and '90s.
It's more academic, in the sense that it's it's thorough and so on. But it's going to be an interesting topic.
Wow, malls are malls gone?
They're now open area shopping kind of places.
I mean, there still is the Mall of America and stuff. I mean, they exist.
There's still one in Santa Rosa, so.
Yeah.
Well, they're still around. Did I tell you my story
economically.
I was almost a partner in a mall in New Jersey.
What?
Guy came to me and he said, I got to talk to you. I read your book. What will Google do? We got to find out what Google would do about shopping. And he's a brilliant guy. He used to be president of a major mall company, and he had a whole new concept for malls, which is that it wasn't for fulfillment. It was for marketing. And I was with
like
him
the
as he
store.
Did in New Jersey, and politics got in the way.
Shocking.
You're probably better off.
This book begins with the disaster that it is the mall, because they made it into a Xanadu, into a standard mall, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's going to go bankrupt.
But his idea is, I think, not wrong, which is we no longer need stores to go get stuff. It's really they're going to be more place to get to learn about things, more of a social experience. Really?
That's rescued Best Buy now.
So you go in there and you have a cup of coffee and talk.
No, you don't have a cup of coffee, but the brands rent space.
Yeah.
And have people there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was so the Beta store pioneered that. They actually mm-hmm. since mm-hmm. shut down because COVID just killed them.
Really? I didn't know that.
But Yeah, it was really sad. Like probably 4 months ago, I want to say they shut down.
February 18th.
Yeah, the idea was. Oh, there you go. Oh, that was four. Wow.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was really a bummer because I really loved going in there and like playing with stuff and seeing all this kind of crazy stuff. But
did you ever buy anything there?
That's the problem.
I bought. Well, no, because their whole business model was actually predicated on marketing, like. The stuff like the companies would pay to show off their stuff
for the real estate,
and then they pivoted basically. To like online video sales during the pandemic, like live video demos, and that didn't do too great. But yes, I did buy things there.
One more. Are you fans of libraries? Do you like libraries?
I already have that book.
Oh. Is it The Library by Susan Orlean?
No. The Library by Andrew Pettigrew and Arthur DeVenter.
Yes, I ordered it because of you.
Me.
And
Pettigrew
I have
is my it, academic hero.
And yet to read it?
No, I've read it. I haven't finished it yet to finish it because I had to read something else. But
Termination Shop?
Yeah. But, you know, between you and you, Jeff, and Andy Iannacco, that's my whole wish list. But The Library of Fragile History, I do have it, and I still have 14 hours and 21 minutes left. But I really, no, I did. Wow. I started it, and I really liked it. I just, like I said.
It's a fascinating.
There's too many good books, and I, unlike you, I don't have time to read as much as you do.
Well, I do it while I'm driving.
Oh, and you drive places.
Yes.
See, I don't drive places. Yes. I miss that.
That's what gets me is I know you don't have a lot of time, yet you're still able to get all of these books in. That just blows my mind. It makes me feel
really audiobooks for me is the savior because I can listen while I'm doing other
stuff. That's the thing. I do audiobooks. That's pretty much the only way I can consume books.
Yeah.
And I'll try to do it while I'm out on the walk or doing some chore or shooting or what have you and still end up not having as much time as
well,
I should.
You shouldn't actually read books. You should listen to podcasts.
I realize
we're really shooting ourselves in the foot. In fact, I got an email from somebody who said,
too.
I haven't heard your show in a long time because you introduced me to Audible, and frankly, I don't. And I knew that, though. I mean, you know, look, I'm not going
to. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I usually tweet what I'm listening to try to help spread the gospel of podcasts.
We live in. There can't have ever been a moment in history where there was this much content available at our fingertips. I know there never has been anything like this.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Yeah, not even close.
You know, I'm working on a project about magazines, and it occurs to me that, you know, writing used to be something that was a special skill. Not forever did writers get paid, but once they started getting paid and became commercial and became companies and so on, that's going away because now in a world of abundance, the value of writing is going toward nil.
Yeah, especially when Lambda and GPT-3 starts writing. They take over. And
Have you played with GPT-3?
No. Have you?
You can. Did you know that? It's on the rundown.
From OpenAI. This is one of the artificial intelligences. And we've been talking about DALL-E from OpenAI, which you have to get on a list to play with. But you can play with GPT-3 now. How do you do that?
Down there.
Okay.
Well, where did I put it? I mean,
is it beta?
I don't know the number for you. You can search.
That's all right. I'm just looking at openai.org or .com.
156, 157.
Thank you. There was a TikTok of a guy got GPT-3 to take an SAT test question.
Oh, that's interesting. Here, let's watch that. Oh, I don't have audio turned on. Here we go. And I still don't have audio. There we go. Okay, play it now.
We're going to find out if an AI can take the SAT. In the past year or so, you may have heard of a tool called GPT-3. That's what we're going to use. It sounds more complicated than it is, and let me show you why it's not. This is the GPT-3 OpenAI.
By the way, this is guy super... is my mom's vision of what a nerd looks like. I just say, this is it right there.
User-friendly, especially for beginners. You just describe what you want it to do, and it does it, which is great because I'm way too lazy to actually code this. Anyway, taking the SAT means answering questions, so we're going to find some. OpenAI is really good at reading, so we're going to give it some reading.
This is one of those 2-minute, 51-second TikToks.
An SAT practice guide that the College Board put out. And then we're going to see if GPT-3 can answer the questions.
4 seconds.
Here's what happens?
He puts in reading comprehension. He gives it two sample questions to make sure that it knows what it's supposed to do. It didn't do the ones in order because the first two were A, and A is the answer, so he didn't do that. Then he puts in a question, the next question, that it gets it right and does it in format.
It does it right.
So I went on and played with it.
Wow.
And so Blaise Aguera y Arcas from Google Responsible AI team had an essay in The Atlantic. I'm sorry, The Atlantic, in The Economist last week. So I took his scenario from that and I asked GPT-3 similar questions.
This is the one where he did the Daisy and the three kids in the playground and all that
exactly.
stuff. Yeah.
So I asked GPT-3, I said, Jeff talks a lot about moral panic in media coverage of the internet. Stacy always disagrees. Who's right?
And then,
answered, let's see, there is no right or wrong answer to this question. It depends on each person's opinion, which sounds very much like Stacy.
Okay, that's all right. So you can do this at beta.openai.com/playground. You do have to create an account, which I'm doing right now. And then
sign on with Google.
Oh, yeah. And then you can what? You can give it prompts and have it.
Yeah.
And then it wants to know, I'm exploring personal. I'm a journalist. There you go.
No, don't do that. Go back.
I'm suddenly not a journalist. I'm exploring personal use. Yeah. Ooh,
journalism?
That was a close one. Now I'm a lying journalist. Thank you very much. All right.
Did we just do that on air?
That's
really
hysterical.
This ain't journalism.
You know, they always told me you never, when you're crossing into a country, say on your passport that you're a journalist. That's just you know, you're going to get arrested, thrown in a gulag.
When you cross into AI, Silicon Valley, which is another country.
It's a different gulag, I guess, but it's the same thing. Well, that was fun. Probably better than the top story of the week, which is Elon. Let's talk about, instead of Elon, we'll get to Elon later. Let's talk about VidCon, which is Wednesday. Information article.
Today, right?
Yeah, starts today in beautiful Southern California, Anaheim. Jeff, you're the one who turned me on to VidCon. This is where you discovered the new media is going great guns, created by the Greens, really for YouTube creators initially. It's now really a TikTok show.
And it's sold to Viacom in the meantime, too.
Yeah, and I noticed Jim Lauterbach is no longer running it. He's a consultant. Right. He left in April. TikTokers everywhere, writes the information.
Germs everywhere is my interpretation.
Although YouTube's still there, and, you know, although Susan Wojcicki is not, they sent a couple of other people.
Oh, wow.
The lower down.
That's new.
Yeah. Head of talent development
at
Snap.
She's still at YouTube?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's done great.
Longevity.
They're thrilled with her. Are you kidding? She's done great.
Oh, yeah.
But it is no longer YouTube's rodeo, and there are considerable warnings that the recession is going to cause a little bit of a shrinkage for creators. And I think that that's probably the case, although they say, you know, it's interesting. They quoted Ezra Cooperstein, who is president of Mr. Beast's talent management company. He says, buckle up. Because tough times are ahead for content creators.
Because the ad business is going to go down. Why?
Yeah. Yeah, because advertisers are taking longer than usual to ink sponsorship deals. Brands are thinking twice, and some are canceling sponsorship deals. And they're pointing out that the recession's going to put a lot of people out of work who will then turn to content creation.
Oh, competition.
So there'll be a lot more competition. Some people are going to try to pursue content creation, says Jenny Liu, a partner at early stage fund Mac Venture Capital. This could be a vital new channel for them to grow a career. So expect a little bit of a squeeze in the creator economy going forward. Recession is not good.
No.
I have in the rundown. Go ahead, Stacey.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I feel like we dodged a bullet with COVID, so we got a few extra years in there. Because really, I thought like everything was going to go to hell once the pandemic started 2 years
ago. This is just long COVID, that's all.
I'm like, so, you know, we got a little bit of a break.
We suffered considerably from COVID initially, and it came back around, started to come back around fourth quarter of last year. But I think that it's, you know, with a very high inflation, collapsing stock market and recession looming, you know, I think that it's probable that it'll get tough again.
You know, this drives me nuts these days. We've got clear causes for all of that, right? We've been through a pandemic. We miraculously did well. Employment is phenomenal. Supply chain is messy for all kinds of reasons, including consumption. And there's a war defending democracy. And rather than talking about the necessary sacrifices we need to make for that and the blessing we have of having survived so far with a million people lost, survived. So I use that with caution.
Mm-hmm.
A pandemic that the economy is still working and so on. Instead, no, it's wine. All gas is a little more. It's just driving me nuts. The lack of generosity.
World War II, people were, you know, metal drives. They were planting victory gardens, buying war bonds. We had ration books. They knew that this was a sacrifice, that this was tough. But there was this feeling in the country of this is what you do. You hold together. You hang tight.
In the 73 oil embargo, which I covered as a Cub reporter, my first big story in the business, we had rationing and price controls. You could only get $3 worth of gas for a time. There were huge lines. The gas price was just as high as it is now. Everything's better than then.
Did people in the gas crisis?
Y'all are getting into old man.
I know.
I remember when gas was $1 a gallon.
Actually, I remember when gas was 33 cents a gallon. That's how old I am. Holy cow. And you could make a phone call for a nickel.
Nickel.
Elon Musk says he wants Twitter to become the WeChat of the Western world. Elon met last week with employees of Twitter. Incredibly rude because he called in on his phone. It was just so
you
rude.
You better give me my 40 hours in the office.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what
you're
going to do.
Well, he did say.
He phoned it in.
And let me see. I had an image. This is not the image of him on his phone, although.
That's pretty good.
It's kind of like that. Somewhere somebody, because I imagine this was a closed meeting, but you know, if you have 8,000 employees they're going to, maybe it was Casey Newton on Platformer that had it, but he said, you know, if you're an excellent employee, maybe we can think about you not working on prem.
Oh, jeez. if you're an excellent
employee, he has plans to be as big as WeChat. WeChat has 1 billion monthly active users. He says Twitter should have 1 billion monthly active users. Don't know exactly how he plans to get those extra 750 million, but his goal.
Yeah, WeChat is in a country with a lot more people, too. It's a platform for so many other things. So,
exactly.
Well, he said that.
I mean,
he said, you live on WeChat in China because it's so helpful, so useful to daily life. I think if we achieve that or come even close to that with Twitter, it would be a success. So is he going to add WeChat-like features? That would be interesting.
I don't know if I would pay for things via Twitter or want to buy things on Twitter. I mean, you sort of see that happening. Like, you can buy things through TikTok or Instagram, and there are people who buy things through Instagram.
Everything. I don't even like Instagram anymore. You know, it's become a video platform. They're suffering so badly from TikTok envy that they're trying to turn into TikTok, and they're just kind of a bad TikTok.
Yeah, be what you are. Don't try to.
It's disappointing to me because I really liked WeChat. Here's the image of how Elon phoned it in. He's like, what is he, in a hotel room? There's somebody behind him.
There, dude, you could have been there.
That's just so...
It looks like he's in the breakfast room at a Days Inn.
And the general reaction... exactly. Probably, maybe you say that actually is where he is. Wait a minute.
He's not in a Days Inn, y'all.
That guy's getting his eggs.
He's making pancakes in the machine. You know those machines are really neat.
Days Inn.
I think you're right. Well, we know he doesn't have a house. He's got to live somewhere.
He lives in a friend's house in Austin.
Oh. But I don't own it, so there. He says a lot of things. The basic reaction, according to Casey Newton, his platformer, is it a Substack platformer? I want to say Substack. His platformer newsletter, Casey, who got a lot of inside stuff, said that the basic reaction from Twitter employees was that was just disjointed and And, you know, here's the three words. He says, if I were to make a word cloud of employee responses, some bigger ones would be incoherent, rambling, uninspiring. At one point, Musk mentioned he has seen no evidence of alien life, and no one knew what to make of that. It's out of nowhere.
That's fair.
I have seen no evidence of alien life, just in case you want to know. I think he's still going to buy it. I mean, you know, meeting with the staff kind of implies that.
Someone was pushing for the purchase to go ahead and follow through. Was it a shareholder or a
well, everybody is. Here. Twitter's suing.
I saw it.
Or shareholders suing, rather. But I think Twitter's insisting. They're saying, no. You said you were going to buy it. There is legal recourse for them.
Right. Yeah.
You break it, you buy it.
Right. Yeah. 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 There's the motto right there.
Hey,
there's a poem there somewhere, you know, like pretty to look at, something to hold, but if you break it, it's sold. There's a poem in there somewhere. Twitter's losing money, says Elon, Twitter? And that's not a great situation. Oh. Analysts think he's going to cut as much as 20% of the workforce. Didn't. He wouldn't say.
He's got a lot of debt to pay off with this thing.
Yeah.
So cut 20% of the workforce, yet work them like crazy to add more features
and grow quadruple the size. I love Casey Newton. Casey writes,
sure about that.
Musk offered bong rip platitudes about the future of civilization. Quote, I want Twitter to contribute to a better, long-lasting civilization where we better understand the nature of reality, man.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask a minute ago, what is stopping Twitter from becoming the next WeChat? I mean, yes, it's here in the U.S., but if they put these features in and get the masses interested in it, it seems like it could totally take off, right? But then he said
you do
cut 20% of the staff. I don't know about that.
You do a lot in China with QR codes, so you can use WeChat to open and pay for things via QR codes, like everywhere in China. Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to imagine how you could add all those features to Twitter. But the challenge is, if you do that, will the existing user base stick around, let alone will you gain 770 million new users? This is the problem always with Twitter.
To adopt you as a standard for transactions.
Well, that's true, too. You got to make the deals. Although Elon, I mean, if anybody could make the deals, it would be Elon. So, I mean.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Who would trust Elon?
Well, that's a good point.
Apparently,
I mean, if you had like Square, if you had the Jack Dorsey Square angle with Twitter, then you could do something like that. So maybe.
Yeah, because as Boz in our chat room points out quite accurately, WeChat's a payment platform. That's the real, you know, secret. I mean, Apple Messages or Facebook Messages is more likely going to be a WeChat than Twitter. Twitter's not something you have on your you keep on your watch or your phone ready at any time. Twitter is so, and historically, Twitter has been slow to add features because if you get too complicated, part of the success, or at least early on in Twitter, was its simplicity. Right?
Yeah.
180 characters.
It was all messages.
It was simple, and it's gotten more and more complicated over time. And there's a risk, like Instagram. I think is really running that risk by adding all this stuff and crapping itself up instead of being what it is natively. Twitter did add a feature today, which is interesting. Twitter Notes. Remember, Twitter bought a newsletter company. I think just the second in size to Substack. I can't remember its name now. But
Review?
Review. R-E-V-U-E. That's right.
Yeah.
They are
good to have somebody young here who has a memory.
You can remember stuff, Stacy. I like that about you. You can now write, or will be, it's rolling out to some people initially, but eventually to everybody, a note, not just a 280 character tweet, but a note which will then.
A note, they show it on the web interface, not the mobile interface.
Right. They'll have a link on the mobile interface. So this is their way. I think this is actually pretty smart of becoming a newsletter platform, right? People are already doing this with tweet threads, which is ridiculous.
No, because we pay to watch. We have the option because we spend money on Twitter Blue to see our tweet threads tweetified. Okay. You're just in that kind of mood today.
No, I'm consistent on this. I've always said, if you're going to write a blog post, write a blog post. Don't divide it up into 20 separate tweets. That's ridiculous.
So it's an art form of its own sort.
I think it's great for I love tweet threads for like events. Like if you're at an event and you're like, it's kind of like a more fun live blog.
That's different because you're live blogging it. But why would somebody take a Medium post?
I also like
chop it up and then go /2/3.
Yeah, just put that in Medium. That I agree with you on that.
I do it for little silly stories.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's suspense you can build up, and I can link to or like just one idea in the thread. I often do that. I often say, "Oh, this is the essence of it. This is what I want to point out." You can't do that in a blog.
Jeff is like, "This is your lead right here, baby journalist."
You're a nut
nutgraph.
Nutgraph.
Oh my God, did we jinx each other? A nutgraph? Oh no.
Oh no.
So
Jeff and I might be on the same wavelength.
Do you think that this will eliminate tweet storms and threads or
no?
No. People still do the threads. Because you could really do a thread as a Twitter note.
Could add a thought later. I mean, do that all the time where, you know, sometime later, oh, I found the answer to that. Or somebody, you can respond.
No, that's a good point.
Somebody says that.
If your thread is a conversation, that's okay. That's a good point. Each item in the thread, then people can respond to, and now you've got a conversation starter. But that makes it even more, you know,
use diffuse. Notes for apologies. That's when you want to say something like, oh, yesterday I said something on a podcast that wasn't clear or I didn't realize.
What do you think of this idea, though, this Twitter Red idea? It's like a basically turns Twitter into a blog, kind of, right? You could make your blog be on Twitter.
No. No one's going to like
Dave Weiner is very happy about this. He says he's been waiting for this.
Apparently,
I like that you have so many platforms to communicate on. Like, I feel like I've got, you know, I am on Twitter a lot. I'm do newsletters. I do blog posts. I do threads. And every now and then I write an actual article for a magazine. And they're all very different. Like, I instinctively know which platform to go to for different things. So I feel like all of these are useful. I guess.
Yeah, as long as you, and then you're saying there's a kind of a native, there's a place for each of these. There's a native way of writing to each of them. You don't do what a lot of people do, which is unfortunate, which is write a blog post and then kind of copy it to 18 other places or write a tweet.
No,
and
I can't even copy my blog post to
That was all the rage for a while. In fact, Hootsuite and a bunch of apps were created so that you could write one message and then have it go to everywhere. And I always felt like that was kind of cheating, right?
Well, I cheat.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I was like, I use it to publish. Like, I get everyone, I mean, I publish something that says Stacy published. I tweet my stories via an automated thing.
Well, yeah, no, that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's publicity. What I'm saying is you write one message and use Hootsuite or something like that to post it to. There's, you know, fewer platforms now, but probably you do it to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, right? But it used to be a lot more places.
Typically, I will share to Twitter and LinkedIn, depending on what the message is, just through one service buffer, and it does it automatically throughout the day.
And
like I said, that's cheating, but it also helps me from a promotional marketing standpoint and frees up about 2 hours in a day.
Yeah, and that's probably what I don't like about it is it really is just a market. People who use it are marketers. It's going to be a marketing message, basically.
Yep.
Well, but some people are on Twitter just like plenty of people, like LinkedIn especially, I would say. I check there once a day, maybe, just to see what's filtering up in like the people are talking about in my thread, right?
I want it to be authentic, is what I want. I want it to be you and your sandwich or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's still authentic. I still wrote something. I'm basically like mine are just like, hey, I wrote this thing. It's about this.
Well, and to be honest, I mean, that's the only way I use Twitter. I don't put anything authentic on there. But I, for instance, as an example, I would say if you post something on Mastodon on twit.social, you should post something different on Twitter. But most people don't do that, by the way. Like,
no.
To me, that's different audience. It should be a different thing.
Right.
You should write.
And I do that. I do that with some of my content, too. Some things don't go to LinkedIn. That goes to Twitter in my automation
All
process.
Content should be.
And I also agree with you with authenticity, because there are times where I will directly go to Twitter to post something, you know, and not have it all scheduled out. Because, yeah, there has to be an authentic version of me out there, too, not just the autopilot version.
Right.
Oh, and, yeah. I mean, I would never, like, not... I mean, y'all, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I am like most of my stuff is me and not my content, or it's me opining about weird stuff like smart pans.
And queso.
And queso. Delicious queso.
All right. So now are we thinking positively about Elon's interest in Twitter or?
No.
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 No, we're not thinking positive. I mean, if it happens, it's going to happen. I don't think his plans for WeChat with the WeChatification of Twitter are going to be, I don't think that's the right way to go necessarily. I also don't know how he could achieve it.
I think the way Elon works, and this is a perfect example, is he just says stuff. I don't think he has a plan.
No.
At the moment, that seemed like a good idea, and tomorrow it'll be something else, which is part of the problem. If you wanted to turn it into WeChat, you would actually have to do a lot of stuff.
Oh,
you couldn't just say it.
Again, to his credit, he's got a history of putting the right people in the right place at the right time.
Sure. So
I can't count him out. Even though he sounds like he's talking out the side of his neck a lot of times, I can't count this guy out.
You did see the open letter from SpaceX employees who said Elon was an embarrassment and a distraction. And
oh, right.
Yeah, frequent source of distraction and embarrassment through his public actions. They also said the spaceflight firm wasn't living up to either its no asshole mantra or a zero tolerance policy on sexual misconduct. Elon fired, I think, at least four people. Well, he didn't.
Yeah.
His CEO at SpaceX fired at least four people for creating the letter. But apparently hundreds of employees signed on to it. Not all of them were fired. So,
isn't there some sort of labor law regarding retaliation? But I guess it varies from state to state.
There's some question about whether that was legal, and we'll see. But
and whether it was actually
organized. If you
unionize,
you can't fire people. Right. But if you're just complaining, right. Sure.
Yeah, I think you probably can. But again, I've seen that question raised by a number of people. Who apparently know what they're talking about. The document claims that employees, The Verge got a hold of it. It was not an open letter. It was a private letter.
But I think done on the company Slack or something.
Yeah. In the internal chat system, employees are being encouraged to sign onto the letter's suggestions, either publicly or anonymously, with a signed version of the letter to be delivered to the desk of SpaceX President Gwynne Shotwell. The document claims that employees across the spectra of gender, ethnicity, seniority, and technical roles have collaborated on writing the letter. They say it's not known who wrote the letter, The Verge says, although I believe there were at least four people fired, probably after The Verge wrote this article. This is June 16th. I think it's unfortunate because... if Elon just shut up for a little while.
Impossible.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge. Sure, we wouldn't be talking about him.
Be a chess master and he will be
a chess master. Good advice. Be a chess master. If you're Magnus Carlsen, the champion of the world, you don't go around saying, here's what I'm going to do in my next game. You just do it.
You just move the pieces.
Microsoft, Meta, and others are founding a Metaverse Open Standards Group. Apple and Google, notably, not yet members. They will focus on pragmatic, action-based actions like hackathons.
You couldn't even get through it.
Like hackathons. Well, now you're talking. And prototyping tools for supporting common standards. They also want to develop a consistent terminology for the metaverse.
Well, who wants to trademark it?
Right. Yeah. Worldwide Web Consortium is involved. I don't know, though. It sounds a little, it doesn't sound like a standards body kind of thing if you're saying, well, we just have to agree on the words. It's not like you're saying, let's be interoperable, which is really what I would expect. You don't want to be, oh, you're going to join a metaverse, but you got to decide which one. Is it Meta's? Is it Apple's? Is it Google's? Is it Microsoft's? Whose metaverse are you going to be in? Because
that's what I thought.
It's messaging all over again, right? Where you've got these silos, but it doesn't look like that's what they're going to be working on. You might be excited about this. Also joining NVIDIA, Qualcomm, the makers of the chips, the hardware, Sony, Unity, the software used widely by Metaverse creations, and Lamina One, which is a blockchain payments startup co-founded by Neil Stephenson.
Oh. Yeah.
Yay.
Just don't have him write about it. This will be waiting forever and ever to get the conclusion.
I'm a little disappointed in Neil, I have to say.
It'll take months to clear of transaction.
Well, the good news is no transactions will ever finish, so you never know. Snow Crash author Neil Stephenson, and by the way, Termination Shock author Neil Stephenson, is building a free metaverse called Lamina One. He actually was, I think he's one of the main reasons all these people want to make a metaverse, because Snow Crash described such an incredibly interesting metaverse. He was really the very first to do it, I think. And a lot of people were inspired by that.
That's great.
Yeah. He certainly, in Cryptonomicon, he talks about cryptography, so it's not surprising that he might be interested in cryptography. The project describes itself as a free metaverse aimed at helping get artists and other value creators paid properly for their work. So we like that. Helping the environment. It'll be provably carbon negative. That's one of the big issues people have with cryptocurrency.
So how do you do that?
I don't know. And you're asking me? I host a podcast. I don't know this stuff. And seeing a truly open metaverse gets built. This is exactly what I was talking about. Instead of seeing the metaverse vision co-opted by monopolies. Okay.
So that takes us back to silos then, right?
No, it takes us away from silos. A truly open metaverse getting built instead of seeing it co-opted by monopolies, instead of having Meta.
It's Web 5.
Okay. It's what?
Okay.
Web 5.
Web 5. That's the Jack Dorsey,
yeah.
Thing we tried to show you the PowerPoint, but we got hopelessly lost somewhere in the middle.
So this is not Facebook's vision. Well, let's think about this, right? If you're going to do a metaverse, there's so many layers you could be open at, right? You could have all your hardware work together. You could have like one or two operating systems on which you build things. Do you want to have the same vector kind of models for things so you could interchange like art from
that would one be good
place to another, right? So that's us. But then if you think about that,
they don't want
where
that.
Where do you make money?
Right.
So, I mean, in somewheres, we used to like build all the way up and it was super cool right on the web. And then we got kind of too aggressive and built too far down, and then we had no interoperability. So I think we'll probably move a little bit kind of in the middle here. And maybe that's what this will be, but I have my doubts. I think everyone just joined it for publicity.
The other thing that Lamina One, Stevenson's thing is saying is not merely a kind of a standard format for stuff, By the way, those formats exist. There's, you know, Apple's USDZ, there's, which is an open format. There are a lot of formats for 3D objects, so that's not so hard. But payments, there can't be a Meta buck and a Google buck and a Microsoft buck. There should be one common payment platform, and that's why he's saying you need blockchain, because there needs to be one decentralized way of accounting. So that
you don't need a decentralized payment platform for the metaverse. A credit card processor works just fine.
Well, that's what Cory Doctorow said, isn't it, when he was on Twitter. He said, we're solving all these things that we already have solutions for that are perfectly sane and sensible and work. Anyway, you can, if you're interested in Lamina One, you can join their Discord.
Every time you say that, I think you're saying Humana, Humana, Humana.
Humana, Humana, Humana One. Hey, why don't you and I start a cryptocurrency called Humana, Humana, Humana.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
going to the moon.
To the moon.
All right. I'm going to join Lamina One because why not? There's only 3,000 members. So this is
you're you can getting add in it early. To your Mastodon.
You're getting in early. I'll add it to my Mastodon. Let's see. Let's see. So anyway, that, you know, I don't know. We'll have to watch and see what this, you know, metaverse open standards group is up to. The W3C is involved, which is a good sign, the World Wide Web Consortium. Okay.
So to Stacey's point, if I buy my designer clothes on the Facebook metaverse...
Can you wear them?
Can I wear them
in the Microsoft metaverse? Good question. Right now?
Because if
no one knows,
because
it's all made
Facebook,
up.
Well, Facebook is going to let you buy designer clothes.
Right.
People think that's a standard, right? But you would have to standardize on so many different, like that's all the way up at the, sorry, application layer.
Right.
Yep. Like even beyond the normal application. So like part of this that gets so, it's like marketing BS is like, oh, we'll create a standard. And they may. But the tech standard and the consumer understanding of a standard are very different. And
also,
so.
Yeah, oh yeah, and a standard, especially as like somebody like the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, who sets the standards for HTML5 and all sorts of web standards that we all use. I mean, that's a very complicated technical thing. You want everybody, you want all the stakeholders involved in the conversation. It's not clear to me that this is exactly what they're trying to do. By the way, Apple's not a member, as I mentioned. Google's not a member. Niantic, I mean, it, which is doing, you know, probably the most aggressive right now, AR stuff, Pokemon Go. And Roblox, the other one that's huge. None of them are members. Maybe they'll
join
later. You
need Unicode fashion. Unicode
oh,
luxury fashion.
Oh, that's what you need. Exactly.
Yeah. For the metaverse.
Exactly. IKEA
well,
is part of it.
A story in here that you can buy now designer fake clothes. This is
yes.
consumerism gone to its extreme.
Well, are they fake if Balenciaga says they're not?
Yeah. I mean, that's just art. If you think of fashion as art, then they're just doing art in 2 or 3D for the metaverse. I mean,
yeah. No, this is going to this is going to happen. It happened on Second Life, as you said the words Linden dollars. It happened in Second Life.
It happens in Minecraft and
yeah.
what's
Fortnite?
That
absolutely,
thank
it's
you.
Huge. It's billions and billions of dollars. Meta is launching a digital clothing store where you could purchase outfits for your avatar from designers like Balenciaga, Prada, and Tom Brown. They're involved.
Oh, I recognize the Tom Brown ones. They're
the one with the stripes,
the edge, the gray one,
the stripy
tailored outfits.
Yeah. That's Tom Brown for sure.
That looks like somebody who got fired from United Airlines. And
it does look like a stewardess outfit.
Tom Brown's clothes are amazing. Do not mess with it.
Okay.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
How do you feel about Balenciaga?
I don't like Balenciaga.
No. And then the middle one is Prada. It looks like,
I like Prada, but
tennis.
They don't fit me.
We're going to play tennis.
Too old for
is
Prada.
There a champion or Russell on there?
No, not yet. But you know, I can, can
you're
imagine.
So plebeian.
There will Nike. I'm sure there will. They're holding out. You know, they're waiting to see who the big metaverse is, and they want to
yeah,
go with the.
Of course,
they want to go with the winner.
Yeah, Blu-ray versus HD DVD.
Tom Brown. I was very tempted by the Tom Brown Samsung watch and Samsung Ultra and S22 Ultra and all that. They do the Tom Brown versions of their stuff. Boy, he likes the stripes. And apparently feels that men need to wear bikini tops.
Can't man's show the nipple.
Ear. It's a man's ear.
Is that why? Is this like to say,
do you remember that from Seinfeld?
Yeah, the man's ear. Yeah. I don't think, I'm just looking at this guy, I don't think he needs a man's ear.
No, he doesn't. Well, but, you know.
I tell you, it's about not showing the nipple.
He's got nipples. Nipple. Yeah, no, but wait a minute. There's his nipples in the picture right above. He took off his man's ear. So,
well, see, in this one, no one's wearing a top.
That's very confusing. In the swimwear, his is hers and hers is his, they say.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. That's not very modern. I don't, see, it's, there's no, is there no color at all in his stuff?
No, he, his last show was awesome. It was like a Toy Story themed show. It was gray, red, mostly reds and grays, some blues. It was very cool.
Yeah, a lot of
Tom
grays.
Brown is, yeah.
Is it, yeah. No, I kind of like it. It's a little pricey.
he's a fancy designer. He's fancy. Not like
the good stuff usually is.
I think you should get these shower sandals, Ant, for $650.
What?
What? How about this T-shirt? $420. Got a stripe.
Okay, you don't buy Tom Brown T-shirts. You buy the suits or the dresses.
Oh, yeah. Let's get this suit. That's nice. I like that.
Suits look like?
I always wanted to wear shorts with a suit. You look like Angus. Not, you look like AC/DC. Sure, what the hell? Okay, I'm okay. Sorry.
That's y'all are just like
that, we're like, plebeians.
I think that's your cruise wearer.
Oh, you're right. I need to get that for the cruise.
For the cruise. For the captain's dinner.
Oh, I would wear shorts to the captain's dinner, and he'd say, "Well, you can't wear shorts in here." I said, "But this is Tom Brown."
No, they'd probably say, "Can you take table 28 their caviar?"
Okay, do you remember Oscar Isaac's outfit at the Met Gala?
That was Tom Brown. Wild.
Lizzo wore Tom Brown.
Lizzo wore Tom Brown, then I'm all over Tom Brown. I am a Tom Brown guy. From now on, stripes everywhere.
Never mind.
Of course, Macy. She gives up. Philistine. Fashion Philistine.
We're fashion Philistines.
Oh, man.
I actually loved Lizzo's.
We could see her give up right there.
Here's Lizzo's Tom Brown outfit. And she, in a TikTok, she actually played the flute for like four notes. That is beautiful. Look at that. Tom Brown just took that off the bed, wrapped it around her, and said, "There we go. You're on your way."
Oh, my gosh. I'm done.
And you could use it as a drapery afterwards. It'll be very nice.
Here's Christine Baranski and Tom Brown, also at the Met Gala.
Look at that cloak. Look at how clean those lines are.
It is beautiful.
It's...
yeah. It's classic. Okay. It's elegant.
Yes, it is.
It's you, Stacey.
And it's very... It tends more masculine, and I like it. It's clean.
It's nice.
If I'm going to buy like an investment piece,
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II in his Tom Brown. It looks like little bees on his jacket. That's cute, and he's also got tails. Look at that
tails.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Fancy tails.
Maisie Williams in her Tom Brown outfit.
So yeah, okay. See,
Oh. Look at that. Oscar Isaac wearing his skirt.
That is your look, Leo.
That's me. I'm going to the captain's dinner like that.
I am wearing a skirt.
He is a brave, brave gentleman. He really is.
I have no problem with kilts.
Is it a kilt, though, or I think it's more like a midi skirt.
That's not midi. It's a skirt.
Midi. M-I-D-I. Yes.
Okay. We are not This Week in Fashion, thank God, because...
Aren't you grateful?
She can't stand to be near us right now. It's going to rub off on her. I don't want any of this on me, says Stacey.
Look at this. Jordan Roth's Tom Brown creation.
Okay, so that looked a lot like his couture show from...
Look at that. Is that a hat?
Yeah.
Is that a giant hat? That's hysterical. Yeah. No, it's funny. I love it. High fashion is interesting.
It's art.
It's art. It is art. It is art. Yeah.
All right. Moving right along.
This is fun. Travis Barker.
Wait, give me some Halston or Elsa Peretti.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had Elsa.
Like Fred Gwynn from the Munsters on the left there. Who's that?
I just like it that he's got tattooed hair. The only problem with tattooed hair is you have to keep shaving your real hair in order to see it. On the other hand, if you decided you didn't like it, you just grow your real hair. And no one know that you've got a tattooed head of hair.
It's not a problem for long.
That is a very...
It's a look. It's a look.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that was the fashion segment of This Week in Google. Let's take a little break. I love it. I love it. I think it's fascinating.
Throwing tomatoes at their speakers right now.
I know.
People, I know. They're like, how long are they going to be talking about this?
Fashion. Well, it's also very visual, and I apologize to our audio listeners, but you can imagine.
How did we get on Tom? Oh, because the Meta.
Metaverse.
Oh, we went from Meta to Met.
Meta to the Met.
Only on Twig.
Show today brought to you by the company that's going to keep you from waking up in the middle of the night tonight. If you're an engineer, if you're responsible for a network, a system, global, you know, cloud, you know these things happen. What was it? Was it last night the entire internet went down thanks to Cloudflare? And I bet you a lot of the companies that, you know, the guy was getting a call in the middle of the night, it's down. And you don't know what's going on because you don't have observability implemented in your network. So you've got to try a bunch of different tools. And, you know, you're just, your heart is pounding. The boss is calling. You've got your team members scrambling. You need New Relic. You need it. New Relic did a study. Only half of all organizations have implemented observability for their networks and systems. That means half of all the companies out there are getting up in the middle of the night, heart pounding, not knowing what's gone wrong. The other half... fix the problem, go back to bed with New Relic. Isn't that that worst feeling? What's going on? Is the back end? Is it the front end? Is it global? Is it the server? Is it the network? Is it the cloud provider? Is it our CDN? Do we have slow running queries? Here's the worst one. Did I introduce a bug in my last deploy? Oy. If you've got New Relic, you can know exactly what's wrong right down to the line of code, which means you can fix it fast, push the fix, and go back to bed. New Relic combines 16 different monitoring products you'd normally get separately. But 16 in one means one tool gives you, one software stack gives you all the answers you need. You get application monitoring, APM, unified monitoring for your apps and your microservices. If you use Kubernetes, you'll love Pixie. Instant Kubernetes observability. You'll get distributed tracing without management headaches. Find and fix issues fast. And you know what? With network performance monitoring, if it is Cloudflare, you'll know because you get a system-wide correlated view. No data silos here. So you have to guess where the performance issues start. And that's just four of the 16 tools. That's why the dev and ops teams at DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games, more than 14,000 companies, use New Relic so they can sleep better at night. They use it to debug their software, to improve their software, to solve problems when they crop up. Whether you're a cloud-native startup, Fortune 500 companies use it. It just takes 5 minutes to set up New Relic in your environment, no matter how complex. So, you know, that late-night call, it's just waiting. Could be happening tonight. Why don't you, before you go to bed tonight, get New Relic? You can get access to the whole New Relic platform for free, forever. No credit card required. The entire platform, 100 gigabytes of data a month, free, forever. So at least do yourself a favor and start off right now with New Relic. Get it set up. 5 minutes from now, you'll feel a lot better. NewRelic.com/twig. NEWRELIC.com/twig. Is it the server? Is it the network? New Relic knows. New Relic knows. NewRelic.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. And you support us, by the way, when you go to NewRelic.com/twig. Amazon is hiring and firing so fast. They're worried they're going to run out of people. Leaked Amazon memo warns, this is from Vox, the company is running out of people to hire. By 2024, according to a leaked Amazon internal research report, this was from a few years ago, Recode actually found it, they could run out of people to hire in their US warehouses.
Immigration.
Raising wages.
Behind every scalable platform is people.
Do you remember? I certainly do. Back in the 1900s when the phone company said, if it keeps up, we're going to have to hire every woman in the world to work as operators. Because at the time, it was a manual process, right? And, number, please. And you had the person had a patch bay and they would connect the two numbers and you could talk. But that was not scalable. Eventually, they came up with automated switching equipment. And eventually, we went digital and solved it entirely. So there are...
Well, Amazon... Oh, today they did launch their first autonomous robot.
There you go.
For the warehouse.
What do you think?
So, to the rescue.
There's the answer.
So in this report, which was leaked recently, but was written in mid-2021, they talked about six levers Amazon could pull to delay the labor crisis by a few years. Raising wages was one of them. Oh, what a thought.
Imagine that.
They did. I mean, you could argue that Amazon is a major factor in inflation because of wage inflation, because they raised their salaries to $15 and it forced others to do so too.
But $15 trickle is down. So low.
I know. But so imagine low. What it was before.
Yeah. Apple raised their starting wage at the Apple stores from $20 to $22, and that was to discourage unionization. But the first Apple store was unionized this week in Towson, Maryland.
It's in Maryland.
It's what? Happening.
Yeah.
One of the other levers, increasing warehouse automation. So there you go, Stacy. That's why the robots. Of course, it's a lot better to build robots than to pay people more money.
Well,
it depends on
you're paying
if it's
people
your
to
business.
Build your robots.
Internal models at Amazon showed that the company was expected to exhaust its entire available labor pool in the Phoenix area by the end of 2021, in the Inland Empire region of California by the end of 2022. They must have done something to fix that. Amazing, right? That's scale. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but wow.
And when was this document?
It was written in 2021, but Recode just got it, so that's why we're talking about it today.
We just found out. It's news to us.
News to us, not apparently to Jeff Bezos, though. He knew all along. He knew.
I haven't heard anything about that new Amazon CEO, I guess. Things are just swimming.
Andrew Jassy?
Andy Glassy.
Jassy.
Jassy, right? Jassy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's his stare that's glassy. His name is Jassy.
Must be doing okay.
Well, I think so, right? He did immediately change some things, right? Start to be a little bit less of a scary corporate culture, I've heard. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being a little bit more friendly to the warehouse folks, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Do they get air conditioning? What about actual pee breaks? Anything? Are they still managed by automated systems?
Yeah, I just saw a story that you can actually be fired without any human intervention at all based on metrics, based on, productivity and stuff.
I thought that was last year.
I mean, you
year.
Could be you fired at...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was last year.
It's still going on?
Well... How come I just saw it, man? I think I saw it on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
But again, I mean, there's happening to media companies now. If you don't get enough clicks, you're out.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, but you're not out fired by a machine. Still, there is some human intervention.
Yeah, but managing by metrics...
Right.
That's been around forever.
I guess it doesn't really matter.
You don't flip enough burgers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So your boss that... doesn't care about you, tells you. I mean, yay.
GE, Jack Welch, supposedly the brilliant CEO, screwed up the company. You know, every year you fire the bottom 10%. Something like that.
Yeah.
And you're right. These are all...
Razor guy.
The first story about this was from April 2019. So never mind. I don't know. Maybe noticed it recently.
Your Twitter algorithm is a little out of whack, sir.
Yeah. That's right. I even covered the story. I should know this. We even talked about it on this show.
This is like the 600 and something episode of this show, so you're forgiven for not remembering everything we talked about.
Everything.
Everything's new under the sun.
You just got to be on Twitter more so it can serve you, you know, things that are
fresher stuff. Well, that is one thing I don't like about Twitter. And is that the algorithmic feed? You get stuff that's a day old. It really bothers me.
Yeah.
I always switch it to latest whenever I
see. I like it because it tells me who I missed.
Well, and that's the other side of it. And so sometimes I do want to see that. You're right, because it's people I care about generally, right?
You should create identical accounts, different names, but following the same people, and then just
you can
do
go back
one
and
algorithmic
forth.
In one timeline.
Yeah, you can go back and forth. No, is that too much trouble?
I'm just saying if you don't want to. If that's too much trouble for you, separate accounts.
That's a lot.
Oh, you know what? I'm excited about a story on here. Where did it go?
Oh, before you do that, let me do an ad so we can all prepare ourselves for Stacy's excitement.
Wait, we literally, okay.
You feel like we just did an ad?
Didn't we just do an ad? Did I just blink and miss an ad?
Let me go check, because I'm not supposed to do them too close together.
Yeah.
I did it 10 minutes ago. You're right. Never mind.
oh, my God, I'm losing time.
Never mind.
All right, do we still hold on? Is that the tease? Find out what excites Stacey?
No, because I can't do ads that close together. They get angry. Okay. Angry ads. So go ahead, Stacey. What are you excited about?
Now I've lost what I was saying.
People want to shoot down Amazon drones.
Is that it?
No.
Lockford, California is going to be the first to get drone delivery. Some locals say, not my town, I'm going to shoot them down.
I read a 1909 New York Times story today that said that farmers were shooting autoists, and one actually fired at it, ever thus.
Farmers are shooting what? Shooting autoists?
Autoists.
What's an autoist?
This is from 1909. You think your Twitter feed's old. Jeff is...
Drivers! An 82-year-old woman who lives directly across the street from the under-construction drone facility Amazon's building in Lockford. She lives there with her dog, horse, two ponies, and a small herd of goats. No, this is not a New York Times story. It's the Washington Post. Said no one had mentioned Amazon's plans to her. The same went for two brothers busily converting the neighborhood winery they recently purchased into a marijuana farm. A man in a local archery shop
That'll help.
Commented jokingly, "Target practice," when he found out, "We have our headline. They're going to shoot at it." No, that's it. That was the headline from what?
Sensational.
Yeah.
Anti-tech.
They're not going to shoot at it. Some guy in an archery shop jokingly said target practice. Suddenly, locals want to shoot them.
What if you shoot someone's, have we figured out what airspace above people's home?
You cannot shoot down a drone any more than you could shoot down an airplane. I don't care whose airspace it is. The drones are big, though. It'll be easy to hit. 6.5 feet wide, 4 feet tall.
Wow.
They're supposed to drop the packages on a predetermined spot.
Noisy. It's going to be.
From 4 feet. So don't order a TV with it. Oh, wait a minute. They don't even have permits from San Joaquin County yet. And they don't have sign up from the Federal Aviation Administration. Oh, wait a minute. Here's somebody.
What?
Here's somebody who's going to shoot it down. They're invading our privacy, says Tom Blyton, a cement contractor who doesn't even live in Lockford. He once threatened to shoot down a neighbor's drone.
I hate my business. God, I hate them.
He's worried about Amazon cameras seeing into his backyard. But anyway,
what are you doing there, Tom? You shouldn't be doing.
He's not worried about the person hiding in the backwoods.
Anyway, I'm not an Amazon guy. I think they're going to wreck everything. Amazon is cooperating with local authorities, however. I'm still looking for somebody who's going to actually shoot them down. Is she going to shoot him down? She looks like she might.
I'm telling you, the guy in 1909 did actually shoot.
He shot an autoist?
Yes, he shot an autoist.
Yeah, I mean, someone has shot drones down before.
Yeah,
that's
a
thing. Okay, I found out what I remembered what I was so excited about when we're done talking about shooting things.
How much longer do I have to do this story before Stacey forgets again? That might be a worthy subject for your wagers.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Former flight assistant Chetty Skeet.
So mean.
Chetty Just Skeet. Mean. See, if your name is Skeet, you don't want to talk about things being shut down. Former flight assistant Chetty Skeet has spoken out publicly about his safety concerns regarding Prime Air. No one has so far, though, in this article, this entire article actually proposed. Some guy once shot his neighbor's drone. Another guy says it'd be good for archery practice. Some Lockford residents said it could make sense for them. I've got a lot of room. Why not? Said Tracy Clark, a local Amazon customer.
Like she wants to buy more stuff because she has a place to put it?
That makes no
George
sense.
Carlin.
I've got a lot of room.
What are they talking about? I need a place for my stuff.
Or is she thinking like she has a lot of room for it to land? What is
land, maybe?
I think it's landing.
Okay. I've got a lot of room. It's not going to land. It drops it from 4 feet. You don't have to have anywhere for it to land.
Yeah.
But you have to have, I mean, if it's 6, you have to have a clear spot that's like 6 or 7 feet wide across if it's 6.5 feet.
Here's one person, Nadine Coster. She says, a drone will frighten the animals.
That's a lot of people are legitimately concerned about.
Yeah, and this is a very rural area with lots of animals, a lot of ranches. Amazon says the company's worked to reduce noise and will work hard to minimize any potential disruption. Lockford resident Joy Huffman, earlier pictured, said her daughters order so much from Amazon that she gets a package delivered almost every day.
It's raining Amazon!
And again, these fine folks need to understand that everything is not going to come on a dadgum drone. You can order
Amazon every day. It's very limited, yeah.
But everything is not coming from a drone. It's not. Someone should educate them.
Okay. So in this entire article, Carolyn O'Donovan, who's mad because she was actually probably sent to Lockford to collect these quotes, no one said they want to shoot him down. Not one. One archer said jokingly it'd be good target practice. Another guy who doesn't even live in Lockford said, I shot a neighbor's drone once, and that's it. Yeah. I thought, I don't know.
Editors.
That's not. She was sent, poor woman, was sent all the way to San Joaquin Valley, to Lockford, to wander around the town. Look, here's a store selling psychic crystals. She was wandering around trying to find somebody who'd say anything like they'd shoot it down. And obviously, she didn't write the headline, right, Jeff? Somebody else writes the headline.
Right.
But even so, she probably saw it and said, hey, my story didn't say that. You shouldn't do that. But no.
She probably didn't have any pull either.
Maybe they mean metaphorically they want to shoot him down. They want to shoot the idea down. No, it says some locals want to shoot them. All right. I don't know. Don't shoot drones.
America.
Don't shoot drones. You know what you could do, though? You could set up a net, like a giant net with lead weights on it, and capture it.
That'd be interesting. A little mini EMP?
Or an EMP. That was the best part of that book, by the way, Termination Shock, was the little mini EMP. That was clever. It wasn't a nuclear explosion. It was collected, harvested energy from its descent into the atmosphere, through the atmosphere.
Haven't finished it yet, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. You know what? You don't have to finish it now. It's okay.
You don't have to.
You really don't.
I really don't think you're going to get the value out of it that you think you are.
So of all the people...
If you want, I'll reimburse you.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. And maybe she did too.
I had a story that I wanted to talk about.
A story, yeah.
What are you excited about?
I'm excited, and I think you will be too. The NPR Smart Audio Report came out. So every year, NPR teams up with Edison Research to talk to people who own smart speakers and people who don't. And I thought the most interesting bit of this report, which I should put in the rundown for you.
Well, I can Google it. That's all right. I'll find it.
Okay, that's true. Google that.
The Smart Audio Report. Here it is.
About my favorite thing to talk about, which we don't talk about enough, is Amazon and Google devices talking back. So there's a lot in here like ownership and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know about y'all, but I get a lot of like pushback from Alexa lately. And it's like, by the way, I'll be like, what's the weather? And it'll tell me the weather. And it's like, by the way, such and such, you know, toilet paper is 50% off. Would you like to add it to your shopping list? And I'm like, I hate you. Go away. And I hate it. And it turns out that there are people who don't mind that. And well, that was to me the most
surprising. But wasn't that the whole plan of Madam A in Amazon, is to be able to give you that one little extra in to make you hit buy now or add to cart?
No, it was supposed to be a voice interface for doing things. It was just a new computing paradigm. I mean, I figured.
I'm sorry. I was just a cynic that they then. Because that was the first thing that came to my mind years ago when I saw that it was Amazon, you know?
Well, I don't think people like listening to their smart speaker that way, because you're trying to do something quickly, and stopping that process with an ad seems really rude. But when the smart speakers were offering, like when they offered you more information than you requested, 40% of people were not bothered at all. 42% were bothered a little. When it recommended a feature without your prompting, like, hey, by the way, if you'd like to learn about your commute, you can ask me, blah, blah, blah. That didn't bother 39% of people at all, and it only bothered 37% a little. And suggesting you purchase something without your prompting, 33% of people were bothered a lot by
it. Yeah, I don't want it given telling me to buy stuff.
But 40% of people were like, yeah, it's not so bad.
You're saying that you said 33% were bothered that it was suggesting the shopping? Just 33%?
Just 33%. Only a third of people were pissed when it suggested that you purchase something without their prompting.
I was like, that should be like
two-thirds. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate it. Yeah. Like, you're like, this happens to us like once a week. I'll be like, Madam A, set an alarm for 7 a.m. And it's like, alarm set for 7 p.m. or 7 a.m. tomorrow.
I could do something else that you don't want me to do. I hate that. And I swear at it every single time. That probably doesn't help. I don't want a chatty Kathy on my speaker. Does it bother you that this is from NPR and they spent so much time talking about advertising on smart speakers? A significant portion of this was about advertising.
I thought this report was actually hilarious because it really shows how stagnant the speaker market is. And then it had these hilarious how it started, how it's going memes in there.
It's not that totally stagnant. I mean, it's growing. 35% of Americans own a smart speaker. That's pretty good.
Yeah, but if you look at the increase, so in part of this is, you know, increasing from a small number, but in 2017 to 2018, they saw 13% increase. 2018 to 19 was 16. 19 to 20 was 29%.
I have that graph here, yeah.
Yeah. And then, but in the last year, 21 to 22, it was only a 9%. So we've stopped increasing.
Growth is slowing, yeah.
Yeah.
But doesn't that make sense considering it's not like a smartphone, which even with smartphones, people aren't buying those as often because they tend to last up to a certain extent. With the speaker, how often do you expect to buy new speakers that that are assistant capable? Because they're just
I think a lot of the growth happened early on is people tested one, they bought one and tested, and then they were like, okay, I'll put three of these
interesting
in my house, or four.
Yeah, I'll buy some more.
And I guess this is one of the things you were laughing at. The reasons people got a smart speaker in 2017 are identical to the reasons they got it in 2022. That has not changed. Number one, listen to music. Number two, ask questions without needing to type. Number three, seems like a fun new gadget.
How often in a day do each of you use your smart speaker?
Every day.
Wow.
Many times every day.
They actually have a stat in here, and
I don't own one.
What?
If I wanted to use that type of capability, I use the Pixel.
Yeah, but you don't have a Madam A, device or a Google.
No, sir.
I have.
Well, wait a minute. Pixel? They sent one of them little freebie things, and I think the hardhead has it somewhere, but I don't use it.
Ant, did you know that 86% of Americans agree smart speakers allow for a more convenient living experience? Did you know that?
86%.
So, 86%.
Actually, there's, so if there's you Ant. Don't have one, why don't you have one?
And what did they say?
I never really, never just saw the need for it.
Oh, you're not worried about privacy then? It's not a privacy issue.
Okay.
No, it's not a privacy issue for me because I have a dadgum smartphone. I know that.
Yeah. They listen to
me. I have it and I never, ever, ever use it. It's the most expensive clock.
Oh, I use it. I use it first thing in the morning. I say, hey, what time is it? And then I say, oh, crap, I got to get going. What's the weather going to be like? And then I go in the bathroom and I say.
They invented a long time ago called a watch.
Wow. I don't wear a watch in bed. And I don't ask my wife because she'll say it's 7-ish. So I want to know. Yeah. So it tells me, look, it's the best thing. You could just say, hey, you know who, what time is it? And by the way, I have Amazon. I have Google. I have Siri in my bedroom, right next to my bed. I have all of them everywhere in the house. So I can choose.
Still thought today was Tuesday.
Well, that, you know, but other than that, that's because nobody was here for me to ask. I get in the bathroom. I play music or I do my vocal warm-ups. I say, hey, Goog, play the 10-minute vocal warm-up.
Wait. No, we got to hear you do vocal warm-ups. I need to hear this.
Yes.
Why would you want to hear that?
Oh, I want to hear this. I definitely want to hear this.
It's a nugget. Yes.
Okay, I'll
want
play.
This to be my ringtone.
This is the one I do, and this is what I. And the Google speaker will play it for me out of here. Ready?
We are starting with the hum.
But then my favorite is, "Mommy made me mash my M&Ms." Mommy made me match my M&Ms. Mommy made me match my M&Ms. Mommy made me match my M&Ms.
Lisa, I'm so sorry.
Mommy made me match my M&Ms. Mommy made me match my... I do it every day except Monday because Sunday I do so much talking. Mom. But the best one, there's one that you go, they go, and now Goog. Goo 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 goo. Goo 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 goo. Anyway, that's my 10. Okay, so that's playing through my Google speaker.
Oh, and the God. Report house is just like, huh, it's Tuesday.
You know, I don't feel so bad about no Lisa about or it. Michael because they kind of know. But I do feel bad for my neighbors because the windows wide open. Mommy. They might think, they probably think they live next door to an opera singer is what I think.
And I had a neighbor in my neighborhood.
That's what you hope they think.
Who did nothing but play the scales and the piano. Nothing.
Yeah.
Never a tune.
But they're good
never.
At the scales.
Only the scales.
Mommy made me watch my M&Ms. Mosh, mash. I can't do it without the guy. Now say it. Mommy made me watch my M&Ms. Sorry.
How many views does that video have?
Oh, a lot. By the way, this is not the only one on YouTube. There's dozens of these. This one has 5,572,000 views. But remember, there's only about 100 people using it. They just use it every day. But there's all sorts of them.
Are you going to do this on the cruise?
I have to do it every day. My vocal coach told me to do it every day.
Is this so you sing better or is this for talking?
It's for talking.
Okay.
You know, I use my voice
for
work.
I don't know how to use any part of it. I was actually going to try singing lessons.
I'll be honest with you. I never did for almost 50 years as a broadcaster. I never did. But I was starting to worry that I didn't want to sound like Jeff as I aged. So I was starting to...
Hey. Hey.
No. I didn't. I was afraid... I want to keep doing this, right? I don't want my voice to deteriorate, and I was starting to worry that maybe it would. I don't smoke. I don't do a lot of the things.
What do you sound like, Larry King or something?
I don't want to sound like Larry King. No, my daughter got nodes, vocal nodes, And so that's what made me aware of it. And we were talking about it. And so I thought, oh, God, you know, maybe I haven't been treating my voice right.
You are
so
a hypochondriac.
No. This is professional training. So I talked to Scott Wilkinson's wife, who happens to be a vocal coach. This is what she does. And I said, I'm most particularly interested in not having my voice get sound old. I don't want to sound like an old man as I get older. I mean, I guess it will.
It's the substance of what you say that makes you sound old, Leo. But go ahead.
Well, that's true. That I give you.
There's that.
I'm going to let Jeff insult you because that was pretty brutal
There's no cure for that one, Mr. Autoist. But
Gutenberg.
But so she told me, you know, there's a few things I need to do and all of that. And so it's good. I think it's good. I should take care of my voice. I feel bad that I haven't all this time. I mean,
this was a reveal. I like this.
Yeah. So anyway, then I go in the kitchen.
We're only beginning.
This is my day with my voice assistant. I go in the kitchen. I say, Madam A, play my flash briefing. And so she plays the news. You can set up all the news things you want to hear. Lisa's always listening to her flash briefing. Or when I'm, you know, cooking something, I might say, set a timer for 3 minutes for mashed potatoes or whatever. And then
in your wonderful machine?
In my machine, I don't have to set the timer because it plays little musical tunes.
It does everything. Yes.
The Thermomix is an amazing piece of technology. There's a new Thermomix in town, by the way. There's a competitor that's less expensive that looks like it does even more. I can't remember the name. Somebody was showing it to me. I'll try to remember.
Oh, Leo.
I wish I could. I think Dick. Oh, I can find it. Dick DiBartolo mentioned it on
Gourmet
on the Gizmiz on the
Gizmo.
No, I'll find it for you. Because Dick was talking about it. I said, well, that's just a clone of the... he does this on the radio show. He brings gadgets. I said, that's just a clone of the Thermomix. But instead of $1,500, here it is. The Cooking Pal Multo.
Oh, I see. I said Multo.
Did you say the Multo? Yeah.
I said Multo, yeah.
This looks just like a Thermomix, basically.
It does.
Yeah. It does. It's a chops, sautés, kneads, steams, boils, whisks, weighs, emulsifies, blends, grates. Mommy made me match my M&Ms.
And it doesn't have cookie dew as its app.
You know what? That is actually a flaw in the Thermomix. I have to constantly re-log into cookie dew, and you pay $30 a year for it, and even though you paid all that money for the hardware. But this looks kind of neat. So, yeah, I would look at it's about half the price, too, I think.
All right.
Yeah. Actually, I would love it if you got one and then you could tell me if it's good or not. The Multo.
Okay.
The Multo Intelligent Cooking System by Cooking Pal. I think these are all European. Yeah, $9.99 instead of $1,500.
You could buy it on time, $91 a month.
Yeah. These are exactly the same attachments. It looks just like a Thermomix. So I think it's the same thing. And one advantage it has a tablet separate from the base.
See it in AR?
Sure, you want it?
Oh, my God, it comes with its own tablet? That's kind of weird.
Well, yeah.
I need this.
The Thermomix...
God, it's huge!
Oh, God, wait till you see the Thermomix.
I've seen the Thermomix.
Well, this is even... But this has... What is this smokestack in the back? That worries me a little bit. yeah. I don't know.
MySpace is gone.
No, MySpace. Space.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Did you already order this?
No, I don't need it. I have a Thermomix. I'm trying to sell Stacy on it.
He's trying to convince me that I don't spend $1,000 without talking to my significant other.
No, it's expensive.
We have deals.
Yeah. No, and as you should. I mean, that's a lot of money. But if you tell him it makes the best
mashed
potatoes.
It's like a whole Tom Brown pair of flats.
I get this instead of the
She's
flats.
Got priorities, folks.
Here comes the sun to end civilization. Here's an uplifting little story from Wired.
A little moral panic here about the sun?
Ain't moral here. This is just panic.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know about solar spots and you know about sun storms and all of that stuff and how they can cause problems, but... This is just one more thing to worry about. If you're worried about a giant comet hitting us, this is just one more thing like that. Every once in a while, the sun will send out a blast of plasma. It always, you know, almost always doesn't go towards the Earth. It's a, yes, a CME, a coronal mass ejection. But if it did hit the Earth, and it, oh yeah, Jammer V's all over this, and it didn't get bounced away by the Earth's magnetic field because they could be opposite polarity. So it's a lot of ifs, but it would basically blow out all the electronics in the world.
There's also a supervolcano under Yellowstone.
Oh, wow. Is that what Old Faithful is? It's just the tip of the supervolcano?
Old Faithful is not the tip of the supervolcano, but there is a potential okay. supervolcano under Yellowstone.
Wow. So there is a deep space climate observatory, which is a satellite about 1 million miles from the Earth that analyzes the speed and polarity of incoming solar particles. And if the cloud's magnetic orientation is dangerous and heading towards the Earth, we could get an hour of warning before impact.
What do we do, unplug everything?
That won't help. Wrap in tinfoil, I don't know. It is possible to shield stuff. Most stuff is not shielded. The biggest issue is it could knock out the electrical grid. We have a lot of transformers, especially old transformers, that would be very susceptible to this. And they would blow. And it could, in effect, render us without power for months in the United States. Imagine how that would be, how much fun that would be. In the summer of 2012, during the historically quiet Cycle 24, two mammoth coronal mass ejections narrowly missed the Earth. So,
oh boy,
just something more to
so cheery.
Thank you, Wired. I particularly like the headline, "Here Comes the Sun to End Civilization." Matt Reibel writing in Wired magazine this week.
But the sun gives life.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And it takes it away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We did it again, Stacey.
What's that?
Uh-oh.
What'd you do?
Oh, we're jinxing again?
Yeah, same thing.
You said the same thing?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
All right. Now I think I better do a little break here. Although, Stacey, I actually like this Smart Audio report. I feel like we didn't even really... 62% of adult Americans use a voice assistant.
My favorite stat was that the number of people, like the number of tasks people complete. We actually went through, like you were doing, Kevin and I, we talked about this on my show. We went through and figured out what we talked to our voice assistants to do. And surprisingly, we had a hard time getting above 10. We made it, but we actually only do a few things with these.
I think that's really common. I mean, I think playing music and setting timers, you know, it's like kind of for most people, mostly what they do. We ask about the weather, you know, before deciding what to wear, Lisa or I will say what's the weather going to be in Petaluma. And because I have Samuel L. Jackson on my Amazon Echo, as well as Melissa McCarthy, depending on my mood, I might say, "Hey, Melissa, what's the weather going to be?" Or, "Hey, Samuel, what's the weather going to be?" And he swears, by the way, when he tells you what the weather is going to be.
Yeah.
He's really good. It's really funny. and then we could set alarms. Oh, we'll, you know, frequently we say, "Hey, Siri, play ocean sounds when we go to bed." And there's a nice, pleasant ocean sounds coming. You know, we have Siri, Apple's little speakers by the bed, and we listen to music and stuff. We use it quite a bit. And unfortunately, they are constantly beeping and booping at us. They're triggered accidentally all the time. So,
right.
That's a, you know, I mean, and they mentioned that in this study, a surprisingly large number of people, even those who have smart speakers, are worried that they're listening in. So,
yeah, but that's shocking. Everybody worries about that.
Yeah, we're just always worried about that, right?
We always think we're so important and people want to talk to us.
47% of smart speaker owners worry that our smart speaker is always listening. Wow, 43% worried that the smart speaker could allow the government to listen into our private conversations. But 58% agree that the companies are going to keep your information secure. Wrong!
You know, I never really had much success with the assistant stuff. Maybe it's because I'm on Android and it's not as great as the Madam A's and Siri, but I just never really had the desire to do anything other than ask for the weather or maybe play a song. But most of the time when I ask it to play a song, it struggles to find the song that I'm just looking for. Mm-hmm. So I hardly even use it, and I just pick up my phone and type in what I want to do.
Google actually was the worst when it came. So I've got Spotify integrated, and Google's Spotify API was terrible in the beginning. It's much better now. Okay. They used to always play the karaoke version of things.
That was a big problem, wasn't it? There's a lot of gamification on Spotify where people will put stuff, because you're going to get money for the play. So they'll put stuff hoping to get you. And and there's a lot of crap on Spotify taking advantage of that. Maybe Spotify's fixed that. I think there must be Spotify, right? I think the more you use it...
It was Google working with... It was the API.
Oh, Google doing
the way they had set up their API is what I heard.
Interesting.
I'll be right back.
The number of speaker owners who listen to a podcast on their smart speaker, by the way, something else I do, in a typical week increased 22% over the past 5 years. Ooh. So it's now 39% of smart speaker owners listen to podcasts. I do that all the time.
But see, I wonder what that number is. That says from 2017 to 2022. What is it from like 2020 to 2022? I bet it's more significant then, right?
Maybe. It increased over the past 5 years, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
sure,
I mean,
you could ask NPR for the
because I bet most of it happened during 2020 to 2022. And I would assume that 2017
when we were stuck in the house.
You're right,
because you were listening in the car mostly. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's certainly something we're aware of. We do after every show. We do a flash briefing for a snippet from the show and make that available to Echo users. And we definitely think that for podcasting, one of the issues of podcasting at the early days was how hard it was. Like you had to jump through hoops to listen. So I've always said, if as soon as it's as easy to listen to a podcast as a radio show, we will do better than radio. And I think that that's come true. And a lot of that is due to smart speakers. You know, just the ease of listening. You can, by the
and
way,
cars.
You can and cars, but you can do it's easier in cars too now because your smartphone is already connected to your car, so you can easily listen to a podcast. But just for people who listen, you can ask for Twig. You know, you can say play the latest This Week in Google podcast, and almost all of them will do that correctly. You can listen to Twit Live, our live stream. Amazon Echo used to call it Twit Live. I don't know if they fixed that or not. I'm good with that, man. I'm good with that.
Maybe I'll try this assistant stuff a little more over the next week or so, but I just never really had any interest. The only thing that I can say I use regularly is if I have those Pixel Buds in and the little notification chime goes
off.
And so then I'll just tap and hold and listen to the notification. But that's about it. Because when I try to respond to, say, a text message, it's a crap show.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Do you have any smart stuff in your home, Ant? Do you have any smart light bulbs or anything like that? So that might be like probably half of my things are instructing my oven to preheat or my thermostat to go or my lights to turn on or doors to lock. So
I every night when I go to bed, I say, hey, Goog, turn the lights out. And the Hue lights that I have that are hooked up and connected to the Google, those are there's about 9 lights to turn off. That's a nice, that's a very nice thing. You know,
it's a nice feature.
You should have a good night routine, Leo. Why don't you advance yourself a little bit? Add in your door locks. Be like, hey,
I don't have automated door locks. So, yet. I don't think so. I've thought about it.
Your garage door and make sure it's closed.
It could, because I have a smart garage door, so it could do that. I actually have a routine where I walk around the house, make sure all the windows and doors are closed. I check the garage, and then I'll lock the door. And as I'm going by the last stage, I say, hey, Goog, turn out the lights. And that's the last stage before I go to bed. So that's the last thing I do.
Are you telling me you don't do a vocal warm-up to go to bed? Or
no, you only do that once a day.
after you work out, when you do your push-ups, I want you to go, Mommy, made me match my M&Ms. Here's one reason I think there's some growth in this. Small kids. In fact, this was the number one reason for wanting a smart speaker was to entertain children. And that's increased 36%. Actually, it's not the number one reason. The number one reason is discover new songs. But the fastest growing reason is entertain children. And that makes, by the way, podcast is number three, so thank you. But that makes a lot of sense. Everybody I know has a young kids complains because their young kids will say, you know, play Baby Shark over and over and over.
Oh, yeah.
Kids love it, though, because they've got something that they can boss around.
Authority over,
Yeah. Well, and like if your parents don't let you have access to a smartphone, I mean, if you think about it, kids, it's greater variety than like those toys you used to punch for like, you know, you'd punch something and it'd play a little song and you'd have like three options, right?
A busy box.
This you can tell it to do whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it because it did give my daughter when we got the, it gave her the ability when she was about six or seven to control things in the house that she, and play her music in a way that she couldn't because everything was digital by then. Because if you think about it, I mean, I had a radio.
Right.
And I had a record player. So, but she had none of that.
No, when my son got out of college, you know, you would give him a stereo maybe or, you know, something like that. I gave him the Google Home Max. That's his music. It's a great little speaker. He can, it does everything. It's a great choice, I think. And now he carries out, you know, he doesn't carry it around, but he, every time he moves, he brings his Home Max. That's a stereo. That's his stereo.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Do you guys still play your Sonoses?
Yeah, but they, God, they're just so stupid.
Told you so.
They're so
smart speakers. Huh?
I'm just disappointed. I think Sonos missed. Honestly, the Google Hub Max is a better choice. I put Madame A on my Sonos. But for some reason, it stops playing after 15 minutes, or not even that long, maybe 10 minutes. It'll just stop. Oh, that's another thing.
My Madame A did that for a while.
Yeah? Did you ever figure out why?
Nope. I just threw Madame A away.
Yeah.
I mean, I put her in the storage closet.
Put her in the closet. That's all Madame A deserves.
I can't play a whole symphony. All I can ever get is one of those stupid...
Oh, a movement. Yeah.
Movement for people who don't like classical music. I don't know how to do it.
You have to ask for the album. So you want Deutsche Grammophon, Opus number 37, the Mozart, Eine kleine Nacht.
Yeah, because on the albums, they never mention movements. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, you ask for the album. I think they'll play the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What was I going to say about Sonos? Do you have Sonos, Stacey, or no?
I got rid of most of my Sonoses, but I still have one. I was going to get the one with the voice assistant just to test it out.
Yeah, I have the Moves, or the most modern ones. And so those are, sit on a charger, but you can carry them around. And those do Madame A or Google or Sonos's voice assistant. But, and they sound good. I mean, they're good speakers. If I could get it so it didn't stop. That's another thing, by the way, listening to audiobooks as well as podcasts. So if you have a Madame A and you use Audible, you could just say, literally, read to me, and it will pick up wherever you left off. That's most of how I listen to Neal Stephenson, you know, moving around the house and stuff. All right, now I really do have to take a break because otherwise this show is going to be 8 hours long and Stacey's going to kill me. She's going to kill me.
I'll just leave it. I'll be like,
I thought you did, actually. When you said I have to go, I thought you would never come back, to be honest.
No, I had to. My husband was running out the door and he asked me if I wanted something. Aww. So I wanted him to go pick up some fruit for me.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Sorry.
Oh. Yes, Sonos has its own voice assistant, which didn't we just find out is the voice of the...
Yeah, they developed it. They launched it at the beginning of this month, and they developed it all on their own. It only works with music, but it is supposed to be much better for music and not have some
have to try it.
That we complain about.
Oh, good. And it's the guy from Breaking Bad, somebody told me.
Yes, and what's interesting, they actually didn't, they had a couple of him recording things, but they had him record a whole bunch, and then they actually computer generated 95%, only like the...
That's how Google does it, too. Yeah. Giancarlo Esposito's voice, they synthesized it. They call it Esposito AI. He just has to do enough. He has the prosody, he records the prosody,
and then they can modify it. Now that I know that, I'm going to definitely turn that on. That's pretty cool. Esposito's voice may eventually converse in more languages than English. His English and Spanish. In fact, they just added Ukrainian, which is really cool. So as long as they have the prosody, I guess they can apply it to other languages. You might be speaking it kind of in a non-native way.
I would be speaking it in a non-native way anyway, though.
Well, but you should get somebody who's a native speaker, right?
Well, they're not going to have a person. They're going to have an AI. Yeah. They're going to essentially have a deepfake.
Using the prosody of a native speaker is what I'm saying would be better, but who knows what they're going to do. Anyway, let's take a little break, come back with more. Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com. Wonderful, as always, to have you. I always worry every week, every Wednesday I walk in and say, is Stacey going to be here? Is she going to be here? Then there's Jeff Jarvis.
Do you wonder what color my hair is going to be?
What color is it today? Purple?
It's purple.
It's very nice. It's a subtle purple. It looks more like a sheen.
Oh, it's very purple.
Is it? Maybe the camera's not catching it.
My lighting is
your
terrible.
Your tux jacket
today.
There, Leo.
Yeah. My tux jacket. You like my purple
tux
jacket?
Yeah, it's like a purple velvet tux.
Yeah. Did you like that? That's Jeff Jarvis. Buzzmachine.com is... Okay, so he's got a new camera. We sent him, what did we send you? I can't remember the name of it.
It's called the Lumina.
The Lumina. It was a Kickstarter, I think. And the idea is, oh, this camera is going to be great. It's going to be as good as a DSLR, but it's, you know, it's a webcam. Yeah, and I think it is good. I think it looks good. It solved some of the problems. But what are those doohickeys?
You can just add a few. There's only like six of them.
Oh. Because
it's AI, it can do things like that. But I can also become very, very sharp.
Yeah, don't make it sharp because that actually made you soft. That was you want unsharp. So
I can blur any amount I want.
It's the Baba Wawa.
Yeah, but it's all done in software. This is powered by AI, which means, you know, it's software. The Baba Wawa. It's cool looking.
It seems to be. It's 4K.
Well, and it's really wide, so you have it zoomed in. In fact, we could zoom in a little more.
I'll zoom out first to show how wide it goes.
It goes really wide.
Good work.
Yeah. But you can zoom in a little.
That'll
bit.
Be good if you have like
Whoa,
cute
not that
animals
much.
At your window.
No, stop, stop.
Well, that's what we want right
stop.
There.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Oh, if you're listening on audio, be thankful.
Yeah. Finally, a reason to listen on audio. Our show today brought. Oh, and Aunt Pruitt's also here, of course, from Hands On Photography and Mr. Moral Panic.
That's the only trick cycle.
I love that. That's a better trick than yellow hands clapping. Our show today brought to you by Policy Genius. Do you have life insurance? You should. You should. Whether you're graduating from school, planning a wedding, welcoming a baby, switching jobs, now's the time to protect your family's finances. When the kids were born, that was the very first thing I did when I got life insurance. Now I'm a grown-up. Now I've got responsibilities. And if anything should happen to me, I don't want them to suffer. Life insurance gives you peace of mind that your loved ones will have a financial cushion if anything should happen to you. You may have some life insurance through your job. Most of the time, it's not enough. In fact, on average, people need 10 times the coverage to properly provide for your families. Typically, life insurance gets more expensive as you get older, so it's a good idea to get your policy sooner than later. The Policy Genius is a very good one-stop shop to find the insurance you need at the right price. They're not the insurer. They're going to help you find the right insurer. Click the link on the show page or go to policygenius.com/twig to get started. In minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. This is always the way to do this because there's huge differences between different policy insurance companies. You could save as much as 50% or more on life insurance just by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. They do need, because they're acting as your, in effect, as an agent for you, they do need to be licensed agents, which is great. So they really know about insurance and they're there at any time to help you through the process. So you can, if you have any questions, if you want to better understand your options or, you know, just make some confident decisions, you feel free to call on their help. They work for you and not the insurance companies. So that's really important. The Policy Genius team works for you and not the insurance companies. They don't add extra fees. They do not sell your info to third parties. They get paid by the insurance companies. They have thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot. They have options that offer coverage in as little as a week. You can get, if you want, options for insurance without medical exams. They've been doing this for a while, too. They've been around since 2014. Over 30 million people have shopped for insurance on Policy Genius, and they've placed over $150 billion in coverage. So, honestly, if you don't have life insurance, but you've got a family and you want to take care of them, policygenius.com/twig. Incidentally, they also do home, auto, disability, renters, and more. When you need renter's insurance, it's a great place to go. I did for my daughter. Head to policygenius.com/twig to get your free life insurance quotes. See how much you can save. It really helps to shop. Be a smart buyer. policygenius.com/twig. That's the lower quarter, lower half. I have a whole section that we're going to start doing from now on called On the Market, Off the Market. On the market, off the market. So off the market, sorry. Actually, let me do on the market first because this is the good news. Rupert Murdoch is on the market. His short-lived marriage, well, 6-7 years. That's not bad. To Jerry Hall.
Four?
His fourth wife, Jerry Hall, former spouse of Mick Jagger. So she had the qualifications. She was used to wrinkly old men. He's 91. She's 65. May, December. Just didn't work out.
I thought he was married to Wendy Deng or something like
that. That's the old one. That's not wife number three.
Okay, sorry.
But hey, good news. On the market. Bad news. Off the market. Bill Nye, the science guy. Just got married. Congratulations.
Aww.
To I know. I thought he'd never get married.
I didn't really think about him being married or not, but, you know, no, I hope he's happy.
Yeah. 66 years old. So, you know, he married journalist Lisa Mundy. She's 61. The ceremony was officiated, I love this, by an actor from Star Trek. Of course.
Maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson.
No, I don't think so. Robert Picardo, who plays the Doctor on Star Trek. Star Trek Voyager.
Like Bill Nye Thank and you. Neil deGrasse Tyson might have like this fun rivalry. Isn't that funny?
I'm sure they do. No, but Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil has Bill on his show, on his podcast.
Yeah, but I have to say this. Oh. Neil deGrasse Tyson is a scientist. Bill Nye is just a science guy. He is not a trained scientist. He's just, he's really a host.
He's a communicator.
He's as much a scientist as I am a scientist.
Yeah. He's media.
He did wear a bow tie, black bow tie with white shirt and orange flower on his lapel, according to the Daily Mail. Pete Souza, another celebrity, former White House photographer for the Obama administration, was the wedding photographer. Pretty nice. Pretty nice. So I'm very happy for Bill Nye, the science guy. His new wife wrote the book Code Girls, The Untold Story of the American Women Codebreakers of World War II.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, that's how they met. Because in the book, she mentions Bill Nye's mom, who was a cryptanalyst, Jacqueline Jenkins Nye. He emailed her. They developed a rapport. They started dating. And now the end is nigh.
Jammer B hit the rim shot.
Another weird thing I learned. That Jerry Hall's marriage to Mick Jagger was annulled.
What? They were married forever.
I know. I didn't know you could. I have to ask Padre about this. I didn't know. I thought you had to be annulled mean like you didn't consummate it or like it was under false pretenses. I don't know. Yeah, they were together forever.
Huh.
Anyway, No word. By the way, the story about Murdoch and Jerry Hall is still just rumor. But I hear.
Oh.
It. What?
We don't report rumor. You reported that like it's fact.
Well, the New York Times does.
Get them.
Let me see where what authoritative.
According to two people with knowledge of the decision.
Two people with knowledge.
Speak only anonymously to discuss a personal matter. That means that Rupert and Jerry told him, but don't quote us.
Yeah, and right. She gets okay. Nothing. It's unlikely, according to the New York Times, to alter the ownership. This is why it's news. Because, you know, he's got Fox News, the Wall Street Journal. It is unlikely to alter the ownership structure of business he holds stakes in. How they would know this? Well, because Rupert told them. The Murdoch family shares in the companies reside in a strictly managed trust. Voting rights are split with his four oldest children, Lachlan, Elizabeth, James, and Prudence. Just like the TV show Succession. And has arranged them so that he can never be outvoted.
But when Rupert goes, which may happen never because he's a vampire, Lachlan is now going to take over. But there are rumors that James would manage a palace coup given the stock structure at that point,
right?
And could change Fox News. You know, I want to add this information. My father, my 96-year-old father, who I love dearly, used to be a Fox News watcher, and everything that came along with that. Then in the pandemic, his hearing aid basically broke. Which we didn't really fix until we knew that and got him up here. And so he didn't really watch Fox News for 2 years. It cured him. He has said Joe Biden's doing a good job. He says
what?
Donald Trump is a problem and he's glad
heresy.
He's out. It's amazing how it can happen. If we could just turn
all
it off.
All because his hearing aid broke.
Pretty much, I think.
By the way, let's give full credit to Bill Nye. He is a mechanical engineer, worked at Boeing, invented a hydraulic resonance suppressor tube that is used on the 747.
Yeah, you try doing that, Leo.
In 1986.
Okay, yeah. So he's not like us.
But wait.
Yeah.
But wait. In 1986, which is, if I'm correct, like 40 years ago, he left Boeing to pursue comedy. Writing and performing for the local sketch television show Almost Live, where he regularly conducted wacky science experiments. So,
that he
so
was serious.
He's an engineer. He has an engineer, mechanical engineering background. I don't know. Is mechanical engineering is science or
yes,
it's applied
it's close
science?
Enough.
It's close enough. It's more than I have. I have a Chinese. I don't even have a degree. I studied Chinese, so nothing. I got nothing. Anyway, so I apologize, Bill Nye, for besmirching you. He is a science guy. I'm avoiding the other depressing story, which is that...
Hack jacuzzis?
Yes. How did you know?
As someone who is very excited about hot tubs, I was like, oh no, hack jacuzzis.
Well, don't
Those
worry.
Those are particle boards inside.
There's not much they could do to you if they hack your jacuzzi, but they can apparently, you know, get your name, address, and phone number. That's about it.
Yeah.
It's not the worst.
Yeah.
It's not the worst.
What story were you avoiding, Leo?
I was going to be talking about the one where it turns out that aviation fuel for small planes is still leaded and has been for years, which is incredibly depressing. Especially
my IQ is like 7 points lower because I'm a child of the leaded gasoline era.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a relief because if you were any smarter, we'd be terrified.
Exactly. You would be Alexa. You would be Lambda.
A lot of small airports, though, are near residential neighborhoods. And this lead is very much a reason why children have lower IQs, health problems. It's not a good thing. And, of course, leaded gasoline was eliminated years ago, but apparently not. There's
a
192 million.
Is this jets
million,
or is this just small?
No, it's small planes. 192 million gallon a year loophole. This is Quartz, which kind of discovered this. If you're a piston engine airplane, there's 170,000 of them, you are, because you need the compression ratio of lead. In fact, they really haven't found a solution for it. They're still trying to make a gasoline that would work in these small planes.
600 tiny hamsters.
Yeah. Quartz just published a six-month investigation about how aviation fuel is poisoning a generation of Americans. And after decades of delays and resistance by oil companies, aircraft manufacturers, even federal agencies, there may be a solution in Ada, Oklahoma. So thank you, Quartz. And, of course, they have video of small planes flying over playgrounds because...
Wait, what is the solution?
A new kind of, I guess, gasoline.
Oh, okay. But it's like not, the hamsters?
Yeah. No, it's not hamsters.
Would you fly in an electric-powered plane?
Yeah.
Yes.
Does that sound freakier? Or that
no,
sound...
no, no.
I'd do it.
Yeah. The problem is distance, of course.
Yeah.
Because the batteries are very heavy, and they, you know, you can't carry enough batteries to go a long way. I think, actually, there are... I'm not a fan of hydrogen fuel cells for personal vehicles, although Mike Elgin's son loves his Toyota Mirai because he lives next door to a hydrogen fueling station. But
there's a hydrogen plane in Termination Shock, remember? And she had to land every 100-something miles.
Yeah, right. But it does... Fuel cells make more sense for long-distance trucking, for things that need to... A lot of energy in a small space, and airplanes. But we don't have the infrastructure yet. She had to land all the time. It was very frustrating. Let's see. Are you ready for the top 50 most popular websites for news in the world? I don't care if you are Jeff Jarvis's. And here they are. I bet you put this in here, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I must have done it for you. Or maybe...
No.
Maybe Jason
God
did.
Of him.
The top... Oh, no, you know what? Maybe it was me. Maybe it was me. I saw this and thought of you. New York Times, you're on your growth. Oh, I know why I put this in here. 36% this year. Why? Wordle. Wordle. They bought Wordle for not a lot of money. Six figures. I think it's low millions. And it has powered... 301,000 new subscribers in the first quarter alone.
Yeah, subscribers?
It's not subscribers to news. It's, yeah.
No, it's subscribers to Wordle. And that's going to wear off.
Dolly is the new Wordle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
I play it, but I don't pay for anything. Am I still considered a subscriber?
You playing Wordle for free? No, you're what we call a freeloader. Oh, I didn't know you could play it for free. All right.
Yeah, I haven't paid for anything. I still play it. When I remember, but they're giving them my information.
Number two?
It just says New York Times in the URL.
In terms of fastest growing sites, New York Post, Rupert Murdoch's New York Post. Daily Mail, number three, Murdoch's Daily Mail. Both tabloids. And you talk about junk, MSN.com, number four.
How?
I tell you what, I know exactly how. Get Windows 11, and you'll see how. It's foisted upon everybody who has Windows 11. It shows up in all the wrong places. If you move your mouse to the left, if you do a search, MSN. And it's terrible. It's the worst. CNN flat year-on-year growth. CNBC flat. Fox News down 1%. That's the Trump effect, right? Finance, Yahoo Finance down 5%. Washington Post down 6%. Uh-oh. And that's 7% down for news.google.com. Anything to say
about
that?
This is the 20th. In fact, I'm not at an event just today that I was invited to mark the 20th birthday of Google News. Christopher Ross.
I like Google News. Compared to MSN or Apple News, Google at least gives me, you know, pretty good stories. They stopped your top five, though, which I'm disappointed. I like that.
Google News... There, every time, it's talking to me. Every time I search something new, it decides that's my new favorite thing. And I'm like,
oh, okay. I know. They're a little too much on the algorithms. Yeah.
It has a new, it has a redesign today. That could be a change log. I don't know. I don't want to ruin your change log.
Oh, I have no idea what's in the change log. I don't pay attention to that.
Wait, why is Jeff the human DDoS? Are you overwhelming us? What are you over? What?
Where are you getting that from, the chat? Oh, Burke. Don't listen to Burke. So SpaceX, here's the picks for you from Google News. Actually, there's a good pick from Gizmodo. SpaceX says 5G interference could make Starlink internet unusable. Why do you think they might say that?
Oh, boy.
Oh, gee, if the telcos start offering high-speed land-based internet.
Verizon already does. T-Mobile already does. Yep. They both have 5G-based.
And I have to say, I bought Verizon for my daughter. I've mentioned this before. They're home-based 5G. It's fantastic. And it's inexpensive because I'm already a Verizon customer. It's $25 a month for unlimited. Now, that could change. Anyway.
Any complaint from her? Anything?
No, she loves it. She's got it hardwired into her iMac, wireless throughout the apartment. It's fantastic. And she now, the point is she's near a freeway, so she's near a 5G tower. But she's right. Getting 150 megabits down and 30 or 40 up. Rock solid consistently. It's very good.
All right.
Very good. For $25 a month. That's why that's the interference SpaceX is talking about. SpaceX has raised its price. Now it's $110 a month. Those were growth. I didn't finish the top 50 English language news sites in the U.S. by number of visits. Number one, CNN. Yeah, they didn't grow, but they are number one. Then the New York Times. Then MSN. That's totally because of Windows. Then Fox News, news.google.com, Yahoo Finance, Washington Post, New York Post, Daily Mail, CNBC, round out the top 10.
Guardian used to be top 10. It's now 16.
Oh, that's too bad because I really like the Guardian. USA Today, 13. People.com, 14. Do you think closing the magazine down will impact that? I wonder if it'll go up or down. Wall Street Journal's only 17, but it's paywalled. It's expensive. Forbes.
Well, there's a lot of there's stuff there. They're going to start like their own wire cutter. They're doing more stuff outside the paywall to try to goose the audience.
That's where the Times did a very good job, right? Because Wordle's free. But actually, I don't know what.
Because they want people to convert.
Yeah.
Martin Nissenholtz, who was the first VP of news at the Times, people went after him and said, it's original sin. You gave away the content. And he said, if we hadn't done that, we would never be as big as we are to convert 2% to paid.
Right. That's the key, is you got to convert a certain percentage. Is it only 2%? No.
Roughly 2 to 3%.
Really?
You know, of paid news out of the total audience, because the total audience is huge. But that's a lot better than any other news site. If you go to the Podunk Daily Disgrace in any metro area, conversion is, 0.3%, and
wait,
the audience is lots of money.
I subscribe to the Daily Disgrace.
I subscribe to my Daily
Disgrace. The Daily Disgrace is very, very... I pay for the Daily Disgrace. You do too, Stacey?
I pay for 3 days. I pay for my city paper at the Bainbridge Island Review.
Is it called the Bugle? It should be called the Bainbridge Bugle. It's not.
It's the Bainbridge Island Review. I pay for the Kitsap County Sun, and I pay for the Seattle Times.
Good for you.
And I pay for the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times.
Oh, yeah.
I stopped paying for the Wall Street Journal. Oh, God, no. No, why
would I? No, it's all digital.
All right.
I just subscribed.
What do I do with the print paper?
I just subscribed to my first Substack, and it made me feel weird, but I really wanted to read this. Do you know Seth Abramson?
Mm-hmm. I know of him, yeah.
Proof. He's kind of an independent investigative reporter. It's only, $5 a month.
He kind of backs up his conspiracies.
He's got almost a million subscribers, though. So that's a lot of money.
Wow.
Jeez. Is it a conspiracy thing? No.
No, he's on the edge of
he's left-wing. He's like the left-wing drudge.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Yeah, yeah.
But
I'm not
like
saying he's
that.
Wrong. I'm just saying that he's out there farther.
I feel like he's actually manic because there's some people that just there's so much content, and he must be like never sleep. He has a whole page of notable people who subscribe. You know,
his Twitter feed is still constant.
Yeah. Well, that's how I got into it. Because he was very smart. He teased. He had a Twitter tweet storm about January 6th. And he said, if you want to read more, it's all in proof. And that's how he got me. And I probably, it's probably a waste of money, but because I probably never read it. But you could see. So, John, you subscribe?
No, but I follow his Twitter feed.
Oh, you're aware of it? Oh, because of his Twitter feed. And he says in his Twitter feed, 930,000 a month, subscribers a month. So at $5 each, that's a pretty, you're making some money. That's, you know. Right. Yeah. So there.
Oh, Leo, you did a horrible disservice on this SpaceX dish.
Let's do it.
5G story.
SpaceX.
Okay,
no, no, I did. I was just, that was called a hot take from reading the headline.
Oh, no. Okay, so here's the deal. They're fighting over 12 gigahertz spectrum. So both of them, well, Dish is like, we can share. And SpaceX is like, no, we can't, because our satellite dishes, it, currently, the way they're designed, there will be interference with the 12 gigahertz spectrum. So basically, this,
so this is just
so
Dish's.
Common. This is a,
just Dish's 5G, not anybody else's 5G.
This is Dish's 5G, and it's Dish doing a spectrum grab, or rather, trying to do one. So, in Dish has done this before. I should never have said that, because Charlie Ergen will come after me. God.
But Dish says that opening the 12 gigahertz range to 5G represents a win-win for all involved.
Okay, yeah. So this is straight up. We had this with, like, remember the DTV transition back in 2008. I mean, this is very common. So what's going to happen is the FCC is actually going to have to do its job, which it's actually really good at. It has the technical expertise to assess this. There is probably interference. It's probably an issue of like, hey, SpaceX, you're going to have to put more shielding on your dishes. It might narrow the capabilities of SpaceX to do this. And Dish will have to do something with, like, probably guard bands to help reduce that interference. But this is actually an interesting and meaty story.
Thank you.
Okay. Go on.
Thank you. No, I'm glad you looked it up. I mean, literally, I didn't even know about it till I looked it up.
Okay, I read the article.
In its analysis, SpaceX claims, and again, the FCC will be the ultimate arbiter here. SpaceX claims some amount of harmful interference from terrestrial mobile service within the 12.2 to 12.7 gigabits, gigabyte hertz.
Gigahertz.
Yeah, there's gigahertz. An extra B in there, and this might be a typo. The 12.2 to 12.7 GHz, it should be, not GBHz, spectrum would occur about 77% of the time, which could result in full Starlink outages 75% of the time.
Yeah, but this is an issue of, like, is this real interference, or did you just design your equipment badly?
Right.
Like, remember all the
wireless. Well, that's the altimeter problem, right?
Exactly. It's the altimeter problem. It's the wireless mic problem. And to be fair, you design for the cheapest constraints you have to work with, right? And so if there's nothing in that band, and then what always happens is when you start using that band for everything else, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So
all
that's
right.
it. I just, I, no, sorry.
No, no,
I
no,
had
no.
To go
I
back
count on
I
you.
Was like, oh.
I count on you for that. No, thank you. I appreciate it. Really important. I didn't want to misrepresent it. I just, you know, I could see why they might not like Verizon doing it. But Dish doesn't even have a product yet. This was part of the T-Mobile Sprint merger. T-Mobile promised that, oh, no, no, don't worry. You're not going to lose a carrier. You're going to gain Dish as a 5G carrier. Dish had no infrastructure, hadn't set it up at all. Now they're rushing to set it up, which is good, I guess. Except that sounds like they're doing so in a way that is potentially bad for others.
Dish's only 5G phone right now costs $900.
Yeah.
It's the Motorola Edge Plus. That's crazy, Dish.
Yeah. I think this was a bill of goods that T-Mobile sold the FTC to allow them to merge with Sprint, and I think it was a bogus. I don't think Dish was ready to do it.
Dish is always okay. Charlie Ergen, who is the chairman of Dish,
I know well. I've been on Charlie's show.
He has a show,
Charlie Chat. Yeah. I was a guest on Charlie Chat. I flew out to Denver and everything.
Wow.
I've done something for Dish, but did I meet Charlie? I don't know. I can't remember.
That was many years ago. This was when Dish was just getting started.
So Dish is trying to cover 20% of the U.S., and they're going to do that, they think. But this additional stuff, Charlie is very famous for just...
He's a tough guy.
He's ballsy. Guy. He cable goes through the FCC. Like he yeah. does it. Yeah. yeah. So he's one of those folk. So they, this does not surprise me.
They were actually in a fight with T-Mobile because T-Mobile wants to shut down the 3G network, and Dish was fighting with them, and that was just
and hasn't it been shut down by now?
Yes, they shut it down on March 31st.
Quite fairly recently, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This recently, this story came out today, I think. Oh no, in February. Dish appears to be mending fences with T-Mobile. Ergen also said in February, AT&T will still remain our primary vendor and the one we work with on a day-to-day basis. Dish had struck a 10-year, $5 billion wholesale deal. Oh, they're going to be an MVNO for AT&T. Dish owns Boost Mobile, Ting Mobile, and Republic Wireless. That I didn't know. They've been buying up. Ting used to be two cows. They've been buying them up. They own Boost Mobile, Ting Mobile, and Republic Wireless.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, Ting was sold in August of 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, they were an advertiser for a while.
Yeah.
In fact, we still use Ting for my father-in-law. Dish confirmed it sunk about $250 million into costs related to the CDMA shutdown fiasco. So...
All right. Sorry. I just had to circle back on that because I was like, wait a second. Okay.
Much respect.
If there's one thing I know, it's Spectrum.
T-Mobile was supposed to help Dish create a competitive replacement for Sprint, but they've been fighting ever since. To sell regulators in their $26 billion mega merger, T-Mobile and Sprint executives told anyone who'd listen the deal would provide near miraculous benefits. Economists were warned that... You know, U.S. telecom mergers are problematic and promises are historically meaningless, and that the reduction in overall competitors would sooner or later result in higher prices and job cuts. U.S. antitrust enforcers concocted an elaborate workaround. This is from The Verge. They would erect Dish Network as the nation's new fourth major wireless carrier. Under the plan, Dish received some T-Mobile spectrum. That's how they got Boost Mobile. And the insurance at T-Mobile would help Dish run a mobile virtual network operator. But then they got in a fight, and now they're replacing T-Mobile with AT&T. What a mess. You don't want to be a telecom reporter.
I was a telecom
reporter. I know.
It was super fun.
Was it? Gosh, it seems like...
They're such characters.
They're characters, yeah. That's right.
I mean, I don't know. It's way more fun than being like a social media reporter.
Yeah, I agree. And it's chewier. There's more to it.
And there's physics, and you can't argue with physics. And I love that because people will be like, we're going to do this. And I'm like, how would you do that? That doesn't make sense.
Right, right. Let's see. Oh my God, we got to get going here. Let's do the change log. Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Let's do
the change. For old time's sake,
you remember this? We used to do this all the time.
The Google change log.
Yes, Google News is 20 years old, and you're right. It is part of our change log today but it's only on the desktop. The redesign. News.google.com. Has a new, fresh look and a brand new briefing and customized topics. Shall we try it out?
Sure.
Ta-da. Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. Oh, that's, yeah. Looks just like the...
You ruined it with dark mode.
Oh, okay. Jeez. Let me see if I can change that for you.
Keep it on dark mode just for you.
Let's see. Oh, I can't.
You care about your
eyes.
Never mind.
Never dark theme. Oh, it's so bright.
Let there be light.
Doesn't that hurt your eyes?
Mm. Painful.
All right.
Just painful.
So,
battery life slipping.
Was it foolish of them to do the top five stories? Because I liked that feature. They don't do that anymore. I do think that Google, you know what? I am going to use this page more. I do feel like this is a good summary of kind of the things
you know
I'm
what I have to
in.
Do. I don't know if it's going to be better now. When I do my research to clutter up the rundown every week. I go in and I used to type in Google News, and I got that's better now. Because what I, if you actually just search for the word Google and then go to the news tab, it's better. It's much better. Different.
That's the old, that's the real original Google News.
Yes, I hope they don't deprecate it because something Google didn't kill yet.
So what do? You search
for the word Google.
Google. You search Google,
you're an idiot.
For Google, but you hit news.
And then click on news.
And this is the old Google News.
This is the old Google News. Much better on the search. Yeah, much better.
No, this is news about Google.
I don't like this, dude.
This is not.
Well, no, that's what I meant. It's news about Google.
That's not what Google News is.
Well, no. Then put in Facebook. This is how I get a better search on Google News, because the Google News search is sucky.
Who's on first?
So you're saying if I go to, as I am now, news.google.com and search for Google,
you get a yucky search result.
I don't know. It looks pretty good to me.
Well, but it's not very deep. If you now go to the other one, it has a lot more stuff.
And, okay.
And also brings them into the clusters of stories.
It's, you know, it's brave of Google because, I mean, among other stories, it's like, is Google dying from the Atlantic?
The Atlantic. Hot takes from the Atlantic.
Hot take.
Get them while they're hot.
Google faces second fine in Russia over banned content. You know.
Yeah, they leave all this
stuff. They leave all this stuff, and good for them. I like,
by the
anyway.
Way, also, Google News is back in Spain after an eight-year hiatus.
I saw that. They made a deal.
Siesta, yeah.
They're happy. So there is a For You tab in the new Google News. Let's just see what they think I'd be interested in. See how accurate. Here's what the Nothing Phone's rear lights do. Okay. A Sonoma town hit 106 degrees yesterday. Yeah, I'm interested.
How hot are you?
And then, oh boy, the everybody, Daisy and Gary shock everyone at the Below Deck Sailing Yacht Season 3 reunion.
It's gotcha.
Who
knows you?
They know me.
Drops the mic.
I'll pretend I'm not reading that story later. Flight cancellations, weather and staffing. Yes, they know, because Google knows that I am flying
next week.
They know that, right? Google Password Manager now has an Android home screen shortcut. Wait a minute. Should be in the change log.
Yeah,
and reviews of the MacBook Pro, Tesla. So it's pretty good, actually, knowing what I'm interested in. A lot of local stuff there.
Wait, what's happening with the Queen?
No, that's my news, not yours. All right, you want to know?
Oh, I guarantee the Queen's on my news.
Yeah, where you saw Queen Elizabeth appears to have gotten a post-platinum Jubilee haircut.
Oh, I thought, you know, maybe she had
got a haircut. Oh, this is People Magazine.
I don't need to care about the hair.
By the way,
I have.
Did they ever put the episode that we played, the Paddington the Bear clip with Queen Elizabeth in? Did they ever put loud that back on YouTube, or is it still blocked?
No, they took that down?
They took it down.
No.
It was taken down. Okay,
you're
so there were two people who were mad at us. Demolition Man, because I played a little clip of Demolition Man. You may remember this 3 weeks ago. But we said, no, that's fair use. And they said, yeah, I guess nobody's watching the movie. So, okay. And by the way, I don't understand why they would even want us to take it down. I played literally 10 seconds. That makes people watch the movie. It doesn't replace watching the movie. What are you, nuts?
Yeah.
But I did play in full Paddington the Bear taking tea with the Queen, because I thought that's newsworthy, and surely everybody else is playing it. It got us, not only, we didn't get a strike, right? They took it down.
But it's here now. I see it.
Yeah, is it back? Oh, good. Thank you, Studio Canal. They own Paddington. So I hope they're not going to take down the Queen's new haircut. I think it just looks like she kind of brushed it back a little bit. That's all.
It actually doesn't look like a very good haircut.
It looks like a terrible haircut.
Right? Yeah, no.
Okay, she's 96. We don't care. She's, you know.
Apparently,
people
really care. I love the Queen. God bless her.
Oh yeah, I'm just like, we're not going to just harsh on an old woman's haircut.
No, it's beautiful. It's
what
beautiful.
They did to our Queen.
Yeah, that's no, she's awesome. She's fantastic. Every country should have billionaires running them. I think. It's a good thing. Google's password manager. Wait a minute. How did that happen? Google's password manager now has an Android home screen shortcut. Yes, Google News knew. Is this a widget? I guess it is. Google Play service has got an update. You can access your passwords. See, I don't put my password manager on the front page because I feel like that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Right? Pretend you don't have one. Don't make it too easy.
Is this the Chrome password storage that you're not supposed to be using anyway? Or does Google have their own like LastPass service?
Oh.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to read the article, Leo.
it's not Chrome. It's a password. Go to Settings, Privacy, Autofill Service from Google Passwords. Click the gear. Add a shortcut.
No, Google Password Manager is what they're storing your stuff in Chrome in. Okay, so this is Google. It's the same thing. So if you store something in Chrome, you end up storing it in your Google Password Manager. So it's giving you the link to that.
You can go to passwords.google.com and see them. They have on-device encryption, which just got added. Don't do it, though, right?
Well, I guess if there's on-device encryption. I mean, they do make you add, like, before you can see any of your passwords, you do have to...
verify, right? Yeah.
Put your...
It used to be you could see it in the clear in the browser. And Google's answer to that, yes.
Really?
This was not too long ago. Google's answer to that is, well, you know, you're on the device. Of course you can. Like, well, you must be authenticated. Yeah, that was not a good answer. So obviously they've taken it more seriously. Because, yeah, it used to be in the clear, which was really a good reason not to use it. Here's the answer to your question. Chrome 103 replaces built-in password list with Android's default manager. So Android does, in fact, have a password manager separate from Chrome.
Oh, my God.
But it's only on Android.
This explains why I'm always, and I switched to LastPass, but God, everywhere I'm at, I'm just constantly entering passwords.
Passkeys.
Like, that's my whole life.
I'm praying passkeys just takes over the world. Although yesterday on Security Now, Steve Gibson once again raised issues with passkeys, the chief of which is, and the FIDO Alliance says, yeah, we haven't really figured out how to do this. It's non-portable. So if you set up passkeys with your Apple device, you're stuck. You can't move to an Android device and vice versa. And the FIDO Alliance says, yeah, it would be insecure to allow export of passwords, so we're not going to. But every password manager does allow export of passwords for this very reason. I think it's a very important feature. So here I am. I went to passwords.google.com, and these are passwords saved in my Google account, and they are to apps as well as to web pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. There's only a few of them.
You're not supposed to use those. I mean,
I don't. This is from old. This is old. This is like
you
ages
can do
ago.
It for things like your jacuzzi because that's insecure anyway. But don't do it for like your banking stuff.
It's already insecure.
Yeah, you're fried anyway.
So that's in Chrome 103, Google Password Manager. Wow, this whole show is about it. The whole changelog. Google Password Manager starts offering on-device encryption. I just mentioned that on Android, iOS, and Chrome. So it is cross-platform. Maybe this isn't a bad choice.
No, the issue is when things are stored in the browser.
But they're not.
This is a new thing.
This is not Chrome's password manager. This is a new thing.
Okay, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's done on a device. Well, yeah, because it's not just in Chrome is the point.
Because what is it? The Emotinet or something? What virus? Emotinet browser.
The encryption key used to access your passwords is safely stored in your Google account. So Google has access to it. And Google then uses this key to decrypt your passwords. On-device encryption cannot be removed once set up and can be enabled on multiple devices. I have to investigate this more, but it sounds like... Google has kind of beefed up its password manager beyond Chrome. It's now, you know, device-wide. It has on-device encryption. Sounds pretty good. At least it's a free choice. It's better. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think you're right to use LastPass or Bitwarden, our sponsor, or some third party. But Google TV profiles are here. I signed into my Google TV this morning, and it said, "Hey, profiles are here. Who are you?" And I said, "I'm Leo." And it said, "Good." Now you can click switch account and add other people to your profile, and they can have their own settings and their own memorized shows and so forth and so on. I actually quite like Google TV. That's in the newest Chromecast, and I think it's quite good. I'm very happy with it.
It's just like what the other apps are doing, except
yeah, everybody else does
more
it.
Of a platform,
right? Right.
Although it's super fun to like totally mess with your family. Like how many of y'all will watch stop. Something like Bridgerton on my husband's Netflix?
Oh, that's
my
God. So mean.
Just stop.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that is mean. Oh.
You know, you might want to watch episode 4 of Bridgerton. You've been enjoying it so far.
How do you feel about Outlander? And then he's like, "Oh, this looks interesting." And then he's like, "Oh,
it's a romance show." Really? Do you just watch like period piece romance shows? That's your yeah. jam?
It's not my only jam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I am like sci-fi, period romance, yeah. British murder mysteries.
Me too.
And Spectrum.
If there were a TV show about...
Don't forget the chips.
Radio frequency spectrum, it would be a hit with one person. Stacey Higginbotham. Finally, Google Maps dark mode appears broken on Android Auto.
Yay, God, there is a God.
Now, come on. When you're in driving so in your hate. Car, you want dark
no.
mode. You don't
no,
want the...
I don't.
It'll
no,
blind
I
you
don't
at night.
Use it. No. No.
Yeah, you don't want that at night, Mr. Jarvis.
It'll blind you.
Really bad.
Actually, you're not going to like this because it's broken in the sense that it's stuck in dark mode.
Well, I never put it in dark mode. Sounds like it happened to me.
Oh. Ooh. Okay. All right. Well, I don't use the Android Auto anyway. I like my CarPlay. I admit it. And that's the Google changelog. And just for Stacy, why America will lose semiconductors. Tangible bipartisan solutions for solving a national security crisis. Stacy Higginbotham has the story.
I put that in there.
No,
just
I don't.
For Stacy.
Why bring politics into semiconductors? They're so pure and good.
That's true. So we really have been, I did not know this, but we have been dominant up to now, all the, not only the you know, the companies, but the semiconductor equipment companies, the design companies, the software companies, all U.S. based, the biggest ones, the best known ones.
Yeah, we got really worried about it. And that's why we started to see equipment manufacturing go overseas.
Right.
We freaked out. We created Sematech, and that was in the, late 80s, early yeah. 90s.
That dominance is shifting away, writes the author of this Substack piece, Dylan Patel, to countries it poses geopolitical risks. U.S. share of chip manufacturing is at all-time low, thanks to TSMC and Samsung and others. Mm-hmm. The U.S. will lose the semiconductor industry unless immediate action is taken. This is a national security crisis.
So the reason we lost it is because it is so freaking expensive and Wall Street punishes companies for investing right. in these long-term. I mean, this is like basically saying, yeah, capitalism is dumb when it comes to R&D and that's going to cost us in the long term. Capitalism is bad for long-term investments.
Yep.
Yeah, we suck at that.
Yep. He's saying. U.S. private market of venture capital and angel investing is completely off its rocker, investing in software platform-based tech companies, you know, the Ubers of the world. While this type of investing is fine, these same venture capital and angel investors have completely ignored the semiconductor and hardware space. Well, that's you reap what you sow.
Is it waffle time?
Yeah, sure. Let me do the final advert, and then we can do picks of the week. Yeah,
I apologize. I have a great pick.
I stand corrected. I thought our show was from 3 weeks ago, but it was actually
2 weeks?
Another week. So it's still
it'll never come back. Paddington, yeah. When it comes to Jeez. Business, is a shark. It's all right.
I'm sorry. I think I might have gotten you to play that. I'm sorry.
No. You know what? I played. I knew that could. But the problem is I don't like the chilling effect of this content ID. And so I'm not going to play that game. And the good news is we're fortunate because we don't. The bulk of our revenue comes from sources other than YouTube. I mean, we take a financial hit, but it's not a huge one. And I, you know, it's a few thousand bucks. And I don't. It's for me. I far prefer not to kowtow to the chilling effects. We do, and all of our producers yell at me. You know, everybody yells at me. They say, don't play
no
that.
Comment.
You're going to get us taken down.
No comment.
I'm not going to bow to that kind of BS. We have a fair use right to play it. It's news coverage. We're covering that story. And it's fair use, but, you know, that's not how content
Most
ID
of the time,
works.
The appeal works. Most of the time,
it does. And if somebody like this... Studio Canal, if they said, nope, take it down, then we take it down. I don't know. Did we get a strike? I don't think we got a strike, but I think they did.
No, sir. No strike.
That's the thing that really has a chilling effect, because three strikes and you're out. And that would affect not just this show, but all of our shows. So that would be bad. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you something really awesome that's saving the planet, saving my wallet, and giving me a great product I love, and I'm talking about Blue Land. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away every year? And they live in the landfill forever. They don't biodegrade. You can't recycle them. Wouldn't it be cool if you could order beautiful, high-quality bottles for your cleaning products and refill them time after time so you don't throw them out? Well, that's what Blue Land does. Furthermore, Blue Land helps the planet because in almost every case, these cleaning products are 90% water. So we're trucking around water for no reason at all. Wasting energy, wasting resources. All Blue Land does is, you know, you buy the beautiful Instagrammable bottles. This is the multi-surface cleaner. Nice, lightweight plastic bottle. Good cleaner bottle, right? Or for the hand soap, they're beautiful, heavy glass because you don't want them to fall over when you pump them. You buy the bottles. You use them forever. And when you run out, they send you, this is the active ingredients, a little tablet. You fill the bottle with warm water. You put in the active ingredients. It fizzes. It dissolves. Now this is exactly the same. It is a high-quality cleaning product, but you didn't ship all that water all around the country, and you're not throwing out these beautiful bottles. Blue Land was founded on the belief, and I'm 100% but with them, that a cleaner planet starts by eliminating plastic waste. We're trying to do that throughout our lifestyle. And by creating powerful, effective cleaners for the entire home, there's really no reason to do it. They have toilet bowl tablets you put in there. They're so good. We use their laundry detergent, their little tablets for that, no plastic. We use their hand soap in every sink in the house. And it smells great, by the way. There's some wonderful scents. Iris agave, lavender, eucalyptus. They have special scents for seasonal holidays and so forth. They smell so good. They do the job. They have scent-free, by the way, we use their scent-free laundry soap. They have dishwasher soap. They have dishwashing detergent. All of this without the waste. These beautiful, high-quality Forever bottles start at $10 when you buy a kit. They're meant to be reused forever. The refills are $2 and less. That's all. For a whole fresh new bottle. Compare that to what you pay in the store. It saves you. The only thing you're going to throw away is your outdated notion that earth-friendly stuff doesn't work. It works. It works, and it works great. It saves you money. I love this. I love this. Blue Land, BLUELAND. A great housewarming gift. You know, you could give it to Dad, a late Father's Day gift. BlueLand.com/twig. Right now you get 20% off your first order. BlueLand.com/twig. 20% off your first order of any Blue Land product. But you know what, Mom? We'll love this. We love it. We use it throughout the LaPorte house. We even use it in our bathroom here. BlueLand.com/TWIG. I love a Blue Land.
You will too, and you will love the feeling that you get from doing the right thing. Stacy Higginbotham is so excited. She's so excited about her pick of the week this week. What is it?
It is not connected, Ooh. Y'all.
It's unconnected.
It's my husband. Yeah, it's unconnected, but it's my father, or it's my husband's Father's Day present.
What did he get?
So I played with this at a friend's
house. I hope you didn't give him a vacuum cleaner or household cleaners.
No, I'm gonna. So here's
what?
Here's the device.
Oh, wait a minute. Like, okay, don't tell anybody what it is. Let us guess.
Okay. Yeah, this one's. I've not
already
open
seen it.
You know it.
If you. Yeah, this time I actually did plug it in to the thing.
Is it a waffle maker?
It is not. It is.
Is it a hammer? Is it a meat grinder? It looks like it turns
sleek.
It's a shave ice maker. So you put that in your KitchenAid. Oh, I have to have this.
That's awesome. Okay. So,
oh my God. It.
Because most shaved ice, and I'm going to talk about the downsides. So most shaved ice is real
sweet.
Too chippy.
Too chippy.
Yeah.
Like the ice is not the right consistency.
No, this, they do it somehow in Hawaii. They do it. It's soft. It's beautiful.
So, yes, it's a fine. They have a blade in here that's just for the fine ground. And it's soft. And
it's fluffy.
And it does make it that way. So
that is the best Father's Day gift I've ever heard of.
It is $99.
Did you give him a fun array of father's flavors?
Like, yes, I did.
Tobacco and leather.
Oh, wait, no.
What flavors did you? Oh, nice. You know what I would want, though, is kind of like, can I use like regular real fruit and stuff instead of like sugar syrup and things? I guess I could.
Yeah, you could. I mean, it's ice. Yeah. You can
it's just ice.
You
just ice.
Yeah. This is so cool, Stacey. I'm buying this right now because we have it.
So
everybody should have a KitchenAid. Everybody.
I'd like to have one of those.
Do you want to know the bad of it?
Yeah.
Okay. The bad is you have to use these. It comes with four little cups. These are the special molds.
Oh, they have to go on it.
Yeah. And you have to freeze it. They have to freeze for like 12 to 24 hours. Oh. And there's only four of them. And I feel that if you have a large family or want more shaved ice, you're going to need more of
those. That's a negative.
Cups.
Yeah.
So that is the downside.
Well, that's why they do this, so that it won't melt.
I mean, it's shaved ice. It's
wait a minute. Here she's shaving it into a regular bowl.
No. It's the ice that's being shaved.
Oh, the ice has to be. Oh, I see. Yeah, because they have to fit in. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was the bowl. Oh, so you're just going to run out of shave ice when you do all of these.
See that? But there's only four of those in there. And so you can only make four kind of smallish
couldn't you
things.
Freeze a bunch of them in advance, Stacey?
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at you, Jeff.
Mr. Logical.
Very smart.
Wow.
Shave
so,
ice.
So there you go.
For the whole family. I love it. I mean, it's such a funny. It does one thing and one thing only. It shaves ice.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the Snoopy. Okay, this is like a better Snoopy because the Snoopy is too chippy.
Yeah. No. See,
I had this when
somebody's saying, "Oh, wait a minute! You just get the Snoopy snow cone machine." But that's the difference. That's a snow cone. A snow cone does not equal a shaved ice.
And this will make that. By the way.
What, it has a snow cone setting?
Yeah, it does. It has two settings. One is the softer one, and one is the...
Yeah, shave ice is a very different beast, and I love shave ice. Mm-hmm. See, that's a snow cone. So you can see the ice crystals. They're larger. And then the shave ice is more like that. See that? Oh.
Shave ice is like powder.
It's better than... it's like sherbet almost, right?
Delicious.
Ooh. That's pretty cool.
So what? So you mix it
I think
with
last year he got something whiskey-related. I'm pretty jealous. Good stuff.
He's married to Stacy.
Decent gift giver.
He's the luckiest man in the world. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So you only get four of these for freezing the ice. That is a little
but
bit.
But you just freeze them and put
but
them in.
As Jeff Jarvis has pointed out, you could make, hundreds.
Jeff, that was brilliant. I'm definitely like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
My book recommendations and my ice recommendations cannot be beat.
Good work. And, right, so
and
that's
if,
my thing.
And if you don't have a KitchenAid, you need to get the KitchenAid not included. So you got to get you got to get
this,
the KitchenAid.
This is
which is like $400, but okay, never mind. It's cheaper than a Thermomix, and that's what really counts. And they never break, by the way. I've had my KitchenAid for 40, I'm not kidding, 40 years. It's so old, it's avocado colored.
That's an old one.
That's an old one.
That's an old one.
That's how you know you're old, when you have burnt orange kitchen appliances.
Avocado appliances.
Jeff Jarvis, do you have a number for us?
Yeah, I got various things. I didn't know that there was once a paint made from mummies, but I'm not going to do that one.
Ew, what color is it?
Kellogg's breaking up is interesting, but I don't think that fits. Audiobook growth by 25%, who cares? I think the TikTok Italian sandwich guy.
I knew you'd get to TikTok sooner or later. Donato Caprio.
So go to the one, forget the first three. Go to one of them where he's just making a sandwich. Any of those where he's got a piece of his hand on bread.
Okay.
Just go to one. Just go to one.
Oh, he's Italian.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Allora.
Eh? 8 meno 2 minuti. Le 8 di sera.
So he's in a shop.
Yeah.
Green tomato, ham. You know, the trick on this is just a beautiful piece of French bread. A little olive oil.
It's not French bread. It's got to be Italian bread.
Well, it's Italian, obviously.
That's
crunchy,
it.
Crunchy Italian bread. That's it.
Go to another one. Pick another one.
It's not exactly Salt Hank, but okay. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
There's a nice peasant loaf, though. That's a beautiful loaf. Look at that.
Oh, is that beautiful?
Oh, is that beautiful? Beautiful loaf? Oh.
I need that.
Mm-mm-mm. Oh, this is good. I don't care what you put on that. You could put shoe leather on it. It would
be
a great sandwich. Oh, my God. What is that?
Mortadella, maybe?
I never saw anything like that. This looks like fish skin. And then, a little burrata, mozzarella, something like that.
Mozzarella. Mozzarella, we say.
Yeah. Can I send Salt Hank over to you? That's it. It's not fancy.
That's it.
It's not a fancy sandwich.
One more. Just do one more.
It's just stuff. Stuff on bread. Okay, that's a melon. That's not bread or a squash.
What's a cheese?
Like squash.
That's a squash.
Cheese. Cheese.
Oh, it is cheese.
Told you.
Oh. I'm moving to Italy right now.
Right now.
Never coming back.
Take me with you.
Oh, the best food in the world. Oh, my. I want to go to this guy's. I like how he takes the bread
like
out.
Stacey's
in the middle.
Ice.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what that is, but there's...
Is that a tapenade?
I don't know what the hell that is. It's onions? It looks like maybe. I love he just throws his stuff on. He doesn't lay it on. He's not... No, this is not fancy. This is not prissy. This is a sandwich.
These How do you the say? Places you want to go.
There you go.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfection.
Isn't it?
Okay.
I think it does need a spread of some sort.
That's the olive oil.
He has a pesto on one of them. Put a lot of pesto on one of them.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. All right, I'm sending this to Hank. Because Hank's got twice as many followers, but...
Hank's going to say amateurs.
Amateurs. Amateurs.
Well, the T-shirt and the accent help.
He doesn't edit. It's just one shot. But given that he doesn't really put any work into it, he's got a half a million followers. I think he's doing okay.
He doesn't look like a man who edits. Awesome.
I'm not editing. This I'm not editing. Awesome. Mr. Ant Pruitt, your pick of the week.
Right. If you're looking at my camera right now, I have what's called a Pro Mist filter on the lens. And what that does is basically soften my image, because yes, we want a lot of pretty pixels and the image to be crispy and so forth, but some of these cameras they have you a little too sharp.
Yeah.
And this filter will just soften it a little bit, and it'll also help the lights bloom, such as that one behind me, makes it bloom a little bit and it'll look a little bit better. And you can get this one from Tiffin. That's the one that I use, and yeah, they're not cheap. I recommend the 1/8. If you go with 1/4 or bigger, it starts to get a little too sort of hazy looking. And for those that said, hey, that thing is too expensive, Moment as recommended by one of our club TWIT members. He recommended the Moment Cinebloom, which looks like it does the same thing when it's, and it's just a couple bucks cheaper. So,
well, Moments are made for camera phones.
Well, they have some. They have a DSLR bar.
Like, oh, they do. Oh, too. All right. Mm-hmm. I know that. Oh yeah, look at that. So it gets the lights to bloom more. I find if I just breathe on my lens a little bit, it's going to look like that. Rub a little.
Sometimes that helps, but when it's 100 degrees outside, it doesn't matter.
Nice. Yeah, I think too sharp is not. We're getting used to the too sharp, though. I mean, that's kind of the style now. Everything's.
Well, it's like this camera that I got. Yeah, it was just you could go really high on sharpness.
Yeah, it's too sharp. Yeah.
Mm-mm. I demoed it was one of the Canon cameras last year, and it hurt me pulling the video up into the editor. I was like, man, that's just way too crispy.
Isn't that funny?
It's because I didn't have any type of filter on the front of it to, you know, cut it back some.
So get a mist filter.
Next, yeah, mist filters. They're highly underrated, in my opinion. Next is the folks at Adobe had their Summer Premiere Pro update. They basically tried to make it easier to do workspaces and create vertical video in your workspace. Like right now, I had a preset built in because I know I'm going to work on something that's a square video versus something that's a reel. I just have little presets already built in. But it's like, you know what? This is the future. Let's just go ahead and put these presets in there for everybody. So that's one thing. And they had some performance updates and whatnot, but I thought that was cool. And lastly, Capture One is an Adobe Lightroom alternative in the photography space. They had some updates, including wireless tethering, an iPad app, and a tandem app that allows you to share your live shoot with a client that's on set or even online so they can see some of the shots and make suggestions to your framing and stuff like that.
Very nice. Aunt Pruitt on Instagram, and yes, underscore Pruitt. Yep, make sure you get the underscore. AuntPruitt.com for his NFTs, and of course, twit.tv/HOP. Why are you laughing?
No, not the NFTs, the old school NFTs, AuntPruitt.com/Prince.
Prince. Oh, you mean like you could hang them up on your wall?
Old school NFTs,
man. You can actually own something?
There's a guy on Twitter who tweeted, I have a bunch of NFTs. Of course, I right-clicked and downloaded them, but... yeah, well, that's probably just as good. Sorry to keep you so long. What a fun show, though, as always. I hate to end it. Aunt Pruitt...
yeah, let's keep going for another hour.
I could.
Just to torture Stacey.
I love y'all, but I wouldn't do it for her. I don't hate ending the show. No. At 5:20 in the afternoon.
It's past my dinner time here.
Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. I apologize. Aunt Pruitt is our club leader at Club Twit. He hangs out in the clubhouse, sets up things. I thought we got a couple coming up, like our members' fireside chat. Move to July 28th. Coming up in a couple of weeks, Alex Lindsay and Ask Me Anything. Stacey's Book Club, the voting is on now. Ends Friday, so get on over there and vote. Of course, the main benefit of Club Twit is the ad-free versions of all of our shows. For that, it's just a mere $7 a month. And then throw in the wonderful Discord channel where great conversations are happening, all sorts of benefits in there, access to our two Twit Minecraft servers, the Untitled Linux show. We've got the Giz Fizz. So the shows that we do live in the club will also end up in the Twit Plus feed, like Stacey's Book Club. And that's another benefit. So there's a lot. For $7 a month. We think it's a good deal. And it is one of the ways we are hedging against inflation and recession, both of which are headed our way. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, it's the oncoming train of recession. So please help us out. twit.tv/clubtwit. Jeff Jarvis, thank you for being here, director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. At the Mommy Matched My Peas, City University of New York. Thank you, Jeff. Always a pleasure. You look good. I like this camera.
Mommy Peas.
Mommy made me match my M&Ms. Mommy made me match my... Never mind.
Match or mash?
You know, I think it's match. I think if you do it properly.
Southerners say mash. I hadn't heard
Mom and maybe mash my M&Ms. I'll mash my M&Ms.
Mash that button on that remote.
Let's mash that remote.
Mash that button.
Mash that remote. And Stacey Higginbotham from StaceyOnIoT.com, at GigaStacey on the Twitter box. She's also got that great podcast with Kevin Toefel, the IoT podcast. And she is a purple-haired, amazing spectrum person. Thank you, Stacey. Go enjoy your waffles, everybody. We'll be back next week, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC, live.twit.tv. We'll see you then. Bye-bye. Mommy made me match my M&Ms.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android, on twit.tv.